Of course, I. I don't hear it. I thought the song started, but I don't hear it anymore. Well, I don't hear a song playing, so I'm going to go ahead and start. I don't know if we hit one or not, but good evening, everybody. It's March 2nd, 2020. This is our Monday night call over here at 9:09 Eastern Time, and we're going to get the meeting started. John is not with us tonight. He's got some kind of a bug that seems to be going around. I didn't prepare any Bible reading because I got this last minute, so I don't have anything really prepared. So anybody that wants to get into the queue should do it now. And I believe that that's star 6. Anyway, let me adjust my mic here. So, what's going on? We have a lot going on. There you go. The Q&A has started. Good. Okay. Well, again, good evening. And anybody that wants to get in the queue can get in the queue. Well, we won't have Brent until around 11 o'clock. I think he's going to be in a place that I'll look for him.
11:30, Gerard.
Oh, 11:30. So yep. If you guys can help me, if you see him come in, help to make sure I don't forget, and let's kind of pick him so we don't miss out on them. I just wanted to go over, let me just bring up the NLA website so I can go over some of the latest stuff that we did before we open up the floor. My window isn't changing here, just bear with me. I don't know, I seem to have an awful lot of computer problems lately. Here we go. So anyway, I want to remind everybody that we have evidence up for the indictment on the vaccination issue, and that's up on the website. Go look at the evidence, and we're going to do that. On, I believe it's this Thursday, or was it a week from this Thursday? I don't remember exactly. Has it been a week already? And we're going to have a meeting, and that's where everybody's going to get together, and we're going to decide, you know, to do the indictment for those things. So if you go to the main page, which I'm still waiting for mine to load, I don't know why this thing is running so slow tonight. And you'll see the vaccination, the tab under, hang on a minute, let me let my thing open up here. I don't know why it's not opening. And I'll walk you guys through it. Important to go in there and look at that stuff, you know, so that you can make an intelligent decision when it comes time to do an indictment. And of course, I'm going to repeat that. Anybody that works for the government or that's a bar lawyer or anything like that is cannot participate in that. So we'll make those announcements when we do that. That just goes without saying. And you also need to be a member to participate, which means that you need to go in and sign up and become, and you have to put down that you want to be a administrator to the common law grand jury, and that requires becoming a member by donating $5 a month or more in order to unlock that part of the site so that you can get in and see that stuff. Okay. So, if you go into the main page, which mine is, computer's running really slow, but you highlight the grand jury on the blue bar, that's the one furthest to the right, and come down to the second line, indictment consideration of Big Farm, and that's the latest one that's going to come, and it's Thursday the 5th, which is coming up in a couple days, where we're going to be meeting in this room to consider indictments. You could read it right there. All the information is there, and there's some videos there. I don't see, looks like we have nothing but videos at this time. I did want John to put in there the lawsuit that John Kennedy Jr. did against the Health and Human Services. Well, they did a FOIA request, and that was to obtain any documentation that Big Farm had made to Health and Human Services as per the mandatory vaccination law that was put in 1980, in the 80s, whenever it was. And part of the caveat to that was that they would every 2 years have to give reports on the safety and efficacy of the vaccines, as well as compliant, that people were, you know, talking people into complying with them and taking them. Well, they worked on the compliance, but it turned out they had to get sued in order to admit that they haven't received one report on any safety studies ever, which they've never done, and we know that, and that's what that paper shows. And I really think it's important to have it up here, although some of these films also has that stuff in it. So if you go in and watch some of these videos, that fact is in here. There's some really good, you know, documentaries like Vaxxed and that, and you'll see there, you know, they give the facts that, you know, they've been injecting everybody and requiring injections of things that have never been tested. So that's where we're at, folks. Okay, so now with that out of the way, Jan, do we have any other announcements before we get started with any questions and answers? Or do you have any questions or announcements to make? So you have to unmute yourself. Everybody's muted. *6 and unmute.
There are several announcements. First pertains to the government by consent course. And as of February 3rd, we had 615 people signed up to take the course, the government by consent course. Of those people, 69% have completed the introduction. Only 9% chapter 1, 4% chapter 2, 5% chapter 3, 2% chapter 4, less than 1% in chapter 5, less than 1% in chapter 6, 5% in chapter 7, 0.1% in chapter 8, and 1% in chapter 9, and only 3% have completed chapter 10, which means that only 18 people out of these 615 that signed up have finished the course. Well, I know we had a big hiatus there. We got up through, I believe it was chapter 2, and then finally got it run up to chapter 6, and it sat there a long time, but it's all done. It's available all through chapter 10, and people need to that haven't completed it, which is about 597 people, to go back and just read through it, get going again. Just do a little at a time if you don't have a lot of time. If you got the time, just jump in and go right through it. It might be a lot easier for you. But people have to start waking up and get out and go through this. It's one of the requirements these people are signed up for. The grand jury administrators, it's one of the requirements. If you don't get through this, then we have a problem. So everybody is encouraged as soon as they have a little time on their hands, or make time, get out there and start working on the government by consent course. Second thing is we now have 8 of the Kimmenin district leaders, and we still have 2 regions which we don't have people for. Now, those are regions 5 or 6, which are the upper Midwest region. That would be North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota as Region 5. Region 6 has Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, and Illinois. And you don't have to live in one of those regions to be the lead man or woman in those regions. You can be adjacent to it. You can even be in Maine and take one of them if you like, because as you know, we function and exist due to wireless communications with everybody. So it's not necessary that you be there and be traveling around these regions. And particularly if you are from an area that's quite a distance from these regions, we would look immediately for helpers for you just in case you need somebody closer to do something. And also all of the leaders for these 10 districts should begin searching for someone to be their backup. So if they are indisposed for some reason and we're having a meeting, they will have somebody that can cover for them and report back to them on what went on. And that's about all that I have for announcements, other than, as I'm sure you all know by now, that John Drash has a regularly scheduled show on Patriot Soapbox at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time each and every Monday. And I believe he's still doing another show every other Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. That started in February 16th, so take every 2 weeks from then. And Gerard now has a show on Patriot Soapbox every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So we're getting out there and we're making some noise on Patriot Soapbox. And I put in the newsletter, there's 3 different links there you can go to view these different performances by John and Gerard. And that's about all I have for announcements. We do have 6 or 7 different questions, if you're ready for questions, Gerard, unless you have some more announcements or someone else does.
I just wanted to ask you, I don't know if you know, I'm looking around, if do we have that vaccine lawsuit on our website anywhere as a document?
I have not seen it as a document.
Okay, because I do have a URL, and maybe I'll announce that later. People should look at that anyway.
Yeah. Right.
So go ahead with any questions you have. We'll start with that, and anybody that has any questions should get in the queue. Otherwise, we're going to have a real quick night here. Right now, we only have one person. That's Dan from Carolinas, and I got to keep us going until Brent gets here at 11. Brent will come in, and we'll all be crickets. All right, go ahead.
Okay, first question. We all know that the people delegated the authority and duty to the general government to regulate commerce. We also know that communism is where the state totally controls and manages all commerce. What is the mechanism and criteria under common law that keeps regulating commerce from gradually becoming full-on communism?
Well, anything the government does, even when they're regulating, has to conform to the national constitution. How come I'm hearing myself? I got a complete echo. So in equity, you know, common law also works with equity, and in equity usually, you know, you have a judge decide, although there can be juries too, but the mechanism is that it has to conform to the national constitution, which, you know, which basically all those rules that are in there apply. In other words, you know, a corporation is a fiction, and the things that they have bastardized, so to speak, is the fact that they want to give corporations the same rights as people. That's where we went wrong. You know, when we're treating corporations as people and people as corporations. So everything is turned upside down. If we just follow the way the Constitution was written, then, you know, look at the federal government only has certain areas, and they're well spelled out in the articles of the Constitution of where they can operate. We're doing an awful lot of stuff that leads to this basic socialist communist, because we have the federal government going into areas that they were never meant to be. So if you just follow the powers of the Congress and the Senate and the Supreme Court, I mean, look at, we got the Supreme Court acting as the final arbiter of everything, and that's not true. That's not the way it's supposed to be. We have three co-equal branches of government. And so, you know, they've usurped power from each other, and the people are ignorant. They don't know any better because they're not studying. That's why, like Jan says, you know, we got these courses and people haven't gone through them. How are you gonna prevent a socialist state from taking over if you don't recognize one when you see it? So the way you prevent that is to chain them with the chain, bind them by the Constitution, as our forefathers said. It's very simple. There's nothing in there that's rocket science, and it's all been laid out, and all we need to do is follow it and stop, you know, embellishing, I guess, is what I would say, and working from emotions instead of working from facts and from the law. The law is what the law is, and we need to follow that. And the reason that we have such a socialistic government is because we haven't followed the rules of the Constitution, of the articles in the Constitution that spell out what each branch of government's job is. And you know, the Supreme Court is not the supreme law of the land. It's actually we the people. You know, we the people are, in fact, like the fifth branch of government, or fourth branch, excuse me, of government. And really, we're the final arbiters, because we were given the power of nullification through the juries and the grand juries. And ultimately, that's the final say. When the Supreme Court has made rulings that say that a controversy that's settled in a court, and that's in a, not in a federal court, but in a regular petit jury, that decision is final, and even the Supreme Court can't overturn it. And that's what we've gotten away from. We have judges saying we don't like that ruling, and they go against the jury. That's treason. But if nobody knows what the law is, they get away with it. You know, any judge that does that should be pulled on the carpet and should be sanctioned and indicted, as a matter of fact. So that's what our job is, to reinstitute the common law grand jury, and that's how you fix all those things. Because when an administrator hears that and investigates that, and then you go see the judge and you say, look at what you did there was treasonous, you can't do that. So that's why we're here assembled doing what we're doing, because that's what's going to keep this government from going degrading down into a democracy and into a dictatorship, because that's where it goes. We know where it goes. There's no one thing for sure is there's nothing new under the sun, and we've seen all these Marxist communist regimes, how they end up, when they end up in death and destruction, and when a few elites with the money and everybody else in slavery. So I hope that answers your question. Get into NLA, get active so that you can defend these things and become an administrator, and then you can hold their feet to the fire in the courts, especially the local courts. That's where it starts, at the county level. I know we do a lot of, we like to go to the federal court, and the only reason for that is because the local courts are so bad and they violate our due process, and you have to go to the federal court when they violate your due process, because that's against the local court, and they won't fix themselves. We know they won't fix themselves, so you have to go to a higher authority, and that's the only reason we end up in the federal court. But ultimately, you know, we should be fixing our local courts. And if we had some good judges there, we made sure we got constitutional people in those seats, we wouldn't have these problems. They would never have to go to the federal court. We could fix them at the county level, as we should. And that goes hand in hand with the sheriff. If you had a good sheriff, my goodness, if you had a judge that was out of control, the grand jury could go see the sheriff. They could do an indictment. They could arrest the judge if they had to. And I know that sounds radical to people. They go, oh, it's terrible. Well, that's what we need. We need some judges, some sheriffs, to arrest some judges. And after that happens a couple of times, you'll see how fast they straighten out. But anyway, that's my answer to that question. What's next, Jan?
Okay. I was wondering if we could discuss credit card fraud on American people and the lawsuits against the banks. I just lost a credit card case on Friday. Barclays Bank sued me for not paying, and my defense was that they had no legal contract signed by both parties, and a custodian of records is not a first-hand witness who could present the ledger demonstrating that money from the bank left the bank account and landed in mine.
Well, you got to be real careful when you go in against the credit card company, because what you're claiming is that they have no contract with your signature on it. And the fact of them, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they do, but they never keep track of it. They're really terrible about that because nobody's ever challenged them. And so if they can prove that you talk to somebody or that you've been making payments and they have somebody that, an actual person that has firsthand knowledge of that, and they'll actually swear to it and come to court and say that you discussed this debt and you accepted the debt, they can hold you to that debt based on that testimony. Now, I won a credit card case because I had a lot of stuff going on, and I had credit card charges, and I had all kinds of, you know, I had credit card fraud. And I didn't know, you know, what accounts were mine and which weren't. And so I did exactly that. I said, I want to see the contract. I want to see my signature. And they could not produce it. And then they finally said, oh, well, we have somebody that will testify that that was his debt. And the judge said, you have somebody with firsthand knowledge? He didn't really believe them. And, of course, see, they didn't. He knew they didn't, because they never do. And we went right up to the day of the trial, and the attorney that was appointed to handle the case showed up, and there was nobody there for the credit card company's witness was not there, and I was ready to go forward, and the judge knew I wasn't going to put up with that. So the attorney said, well, we don't have our witness, and, you know, if they're going to have somebody that's in Nevada testify that they talked to you, then they have to set up ahead of time to do a phone or a Skype or something consultation, and they have to do it with your permission, because you're the one, you know, you're running the case. They're suing you, and they have to get your permission for the person to testify like that. Everybody has to agree. So when it gets down to the wire and they don't have anybody making arrangements to testify, and they haven't asked you, can they have somebody do a phone testimony, then you know they're not going to to produce anybody. So I don't know what you did or how they did it, but the judge, you know, you could probably appeal that case because it should have went to a trial. It should have went to a jury trial. And the thing is if they didn't produce anybody, they should have been defaulted. They should have won by default. And, you know, if they're claiming they have a custodian of records that has firsthand knowledge, having records doesn't mean anything because you can get those records from a dumpster. They can be reproduced. They can be forged. You need to have a live person that says, I spoke to him about this bill. He was paying it. I negated this late charge for him and blah, blah, blah. And we had these discussions back and forth. He accepted the bill. There definitely was a contract with him because, you know, you can have verbal contracts. So don't forget that. You know, I want a wet ink signature. Well, guess what? If you're saying you're going to take a debt on and you're going to pay a debt and you don't have a wet ink signature, that doesn't mean that there's not a contract there. So just be careful with that. Now, they usually never have a wet ink signature, you know. I mean, they get some wet ink signatures because they'll send you these checks that you sign, and on the back of the check has all the terms and conditions of that, and it becomes a loan, and they do have your signature. But I'm telling you, I don't even think they save them because that's how bad they are. I mean, some of the paperwork, because I sued Citibank, or they sued me, and I actually won that suit. And it was mainly because the judge felt like he had some place to hang his hat. The judges will never go against the corporations, but the corporation got so sloppy in my case, and I kept protesting and kept asking for stuff, and they did not deliver it. When the attorney for the other side came in, and she was just an attorney that they called up that was local that showed up in court. She was there like a couple times on this case, went back numerous times over a year and a half. And she said, well, they figured that you're going to dismiss the case, and if you're going to dismiss the case, they asked that you would do it without prejudice, which means they could come back after me. And the judge said, well, why would I do that? And he said, Gerard has been here, been asking for this stuff, has been trying to work with you guys for months and months and months, and now you don't show up with a witness? I'm definitely dismissing it with prejudice. So you can win those cases, but the first thing that you got to win over is the judge. And the judge saw how ridiculous and sloppy they were, and he felt that he had enough things on the record that he didn't mind ruling for me because they left him, basically they left him no choice. Because if you're scheduled for a trial and their witness doesn't show up, guess what? It's not a mistrial, it's a win. It's a default. They defaulted because they didn't answer the calling to come in and present their evidence. And so I don't know what kind of a ruling you got or how it was done, but I would appeal it, and I would stick to my guns, and I would say, show me the witness with the firsthand knowledge. They need to testify. And if you just have a bunch of records someplace that say I paid this or I paid that, that's not evidence. That's not good enough. We have to have a witness with firsthand knowledge. And they usually don't, but, you know, I suppose they could. So that's the answer to that, you know. And I understand this game that they're not taking money out of an account and all that. That's a very, very hard one. No judge is going to rule for that because by ruling for that, he's basically shutting down this fiat money system that we have, the Federal Reserve. And no judge is willing to stick his neck out like that because they would shoot him before sundown probably if he did. I mean, it is a fact, but it's not a fact that we're going to be able to win in court anytime soon. I mean, maybe when Trump kills the Federal Reserve, which is coming up soon, when he wins the election, not if he wins the election, because I'm pretty confident that he will in his second term. The Federal Reserve is not going to be the Federal Reserve anymore, and we need to get rid of that system and put some real money back. And then you might be able to make those arguments that it was never any real money, you know. So, but right now, I don't think anybody's going to go for that. And, you know, even though it's the truth, they're definitely not going to, you know. And they figured, look at you got digital digits that you were able to spend. So as far as they're concerned, you owe it. And in a certain way, you do owe it. I mean, if you did go and use your credit card and buy goods, you know, even though it's a funny money system, listen, you also complied in it. You were complicit in it. You got the benefit of whatever it was you spent. So if you're claiming that you didn't spend it and it was, you know, it wasn't you, then that's fraud. Somebody frauded you, you know, and show me my signature and all that stuff. And that's kind of basically what I did. And they didn't have any records of me with firsthand knowledge or my signature or anything like that. So just a fine line. Just be careful that you're not committing fraud yourself when you take on that tack. That's all. Just be careful. What else, Jan? Anything?
Yep. Next question. If your case against the IRS is successful, will it transcend down to the state level and the local revenue bureaus?
Only in as far as state income tax. State income tax cannot proceed without federal. They base it off the federal. And so if you have no liability with the federal, then you have no liability with the state. They'll never come after you from the state if the federal has released. If you won a case against the federal, the state is never gonna push that, because they base it off the federal income tax return. When you do a state income tax return, I think it even says what's the amount on your federal income tax return. So you can't even begin to put that amount there until you do your federal taxes. So that's as far down as it's going to go. State income tax. It's not going to have anything to do with your land taxes or any other tax that the county might collect on you because you happen to be in business in the county. You know, we're talking income tax only. Okay.
Yep. Next question. Are Michael Bodnarik and Carl Miller's methods on driver's licenses and income tax still effective if put into practice today?
They're not anymore, because the judges have been schooled about that, and they'll just call them sovereign citizens and say they're crazy. And what it is they don't run under the Constitution anymore. They run under a corporate, you know, contract. And as far as they're concerned, there's a contract there. And they're contracting with you, and when you go in, you're contracting with them, and by recognizing their court and their authority, that's the contract. And so they don't feel that they need to be bound by the chains of the Constitution, because they've been taught that you signed away your rights when you entered into this agreement, whatever the controversy is, that you've signed on to give them jurisdiction over you for this debt. You know, it's kind of like signing up for the armed services for 4 years. You have to go whether you want to or not. You've signed the paper, and you lose certain fundamental rights when you do that. And the military takes over those rights and tells you where you should be and what you should do. So that's how they're treating you when you go to court, that you've gotten certain benefits and you've signed into certain things. And even the way that you answer them gives them jurisdiction. You've given them jurisdiction before you even got there without even realizing it. So Carl Miller and Bagnarik's, you know, and Bagnarik knows the Constitution very well, and he can articulate it. And once in a while, you'll get a judge that will uphold that, but for the most part, from what I see out there, they're not following the Constitution at all. So, yes, Carl Miller's things, whatever he won, they've already put statutes in to negate that and to bring it away from the Constitution into equity and contract law. As a matter of fact, they've basically said that all law is equity law, which is a baloney. That, you know, they, even criminal law, they're treating as equity. Which means all that means is if you got enough money, you can buy your way out. Basically, if it's all equity and bouncing the scales, you know, then it, you know, in other words, you get all the justice and freedom that you can afford to buy, and that's a travesty. So I hope that answers your question. But I don't think Carl is having, and Bagnarik's not having much luck with their any new lawsuits that they're doing today.
Okay, and that was the last question, Gerard. Time to go to the queue and see what's cooking.
Okay, very good. Okay, I'm gonna. We have a number here, 2983. Give me your first name. I'm going to unmute you and your state.
Hi, my name is in Missouri.
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up. What's your name? Your first name?
John.
John from Missouri.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
John. How could we help you tonight?
Well, I got jammed up here in a bordering county in Arkansas, and I was red flagged through the Secretary of State in Missouri here, do not stop, do not detain, etc. And they just ignored all that. You know, I was traveling for personal purposes. And they railroaded me and gave me a bunch of tickets and got me with a little bit of weed. And I got a little criminal thing going on there. And trying to get a common law abatement put together, and I'm just wondering if there's anybody in the area or anybody in your organization that could give me a little guidance as to how to properly do this thing, because I want to stand on my rights and, you know, under God, and you know,
well,
I can't take this.
Look at you. You see how they pay attention to that, because you got the Secretary of State of one state to say that you should not be stopped, should not be detained, which basically gave you your sovereignty status, so to speak, which would be the same as a diplomatic immunity. Like if you were a diplomat, you have immunity. They can't stop you and arrest you for anything. I mean, unless you're breaking the common law, doing a capital crime such as murder, then you lose that. Needless to say, you know, you can't come in just because you're a sovereign and break those fundamental laws and principles and expect to get away with it. Now, you became a target, I think, because you had that status, and whoever that police department and that judge was, they're going to make an example out of you because they don't agree with it and they don't believe that they need to abide by it. Now,
that's what Officer Dunn told me, that their judge, that he don't like sovereigns.
Exactly. So I don't know, you know, look, at you could try to do common law abatements, but you're stuck with this judge. And the only thing you could do is get out of that court. And the only way that you're going to get justice is to get that case out of his court and get it out of that state court. And I would take it to a federal court and I would sue that judge. I would sue him personally and I would sue him based on my jurisdiction and due process violations. Move it to the federal court for cause, and you can do that on our site. You can fill out an affidavit showing, I mean, now you only talk about how they violated you as far as your due process rights, not any other case that you had going or what the case that you brought in or that they brought you in on. That doesn't matter. What it matters is your due process and their lack of jurisdiction, where they violated you, and that's what you put into the federal court. That's all they're allowed to look at. And so you can fill out an affidavit, and we can put it on our case and move it to the federal court for cause, but you need to do that yourself also. You need to learn how to fill that paperwork to bring it into the federal court for cause. And try. That's what I would suggest. Try your hand there. You're going to get nowhere with that local judge. And you're probably not with the state judge either. I mean, you know, it's good that, I forget which state you said signed your paperwork.
Missouri.
So that's, you know, that is a little leverage. That's evidence when you go into the federal court that you could present that, look at you've already rose above those things in your own jurisdiction. So they're violating your jurisdiction. They're taking you to, you know, jurisdictions that they have no control over. And that would be the argument I would make and file the federal case. And you might, you know, the federal judge might actually sanction that judge and tell him to back off. you know, because that's his job. And sometimes, a lot of times the federal judges like to do that because they like to slap the lower judges because it kind of preserves their authority. So figure out, we have paperwork on our site how to move cases for cause, do an affidavit, but file the case yourself in federal court and put that judge down as a defendant, whatever you got to do, and make the case against him as well, and the officer that arrested you also. Throw them all in there.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they need to recuse themselves because they're now the subject of a lawsuit by you in the federal court. And at that point, they got to stop all their baloney and they got to answer the suit. And so I think for you, that's the best route.
All right.
If you got any questions, you get a hold of Jim. Jim is the one that takes the intake forms, and he could, you know, and he'll put you to somebody that if you want to fill that form out and maybe give you some sample paperwork. I mean, you can even look at some of our cases where we've moved them for cause to the federal court and use that template, kind of, so to speak. All right.
I'm just brand new. I just signed up just earlier. Who Jim is or how to contact him?
Well, in our directory, you know, we have Jan and Jim does that. Jim does a lot of the paperwork, you know, for these cases that we're moving to federal court, you know. So if you contact Jan or Jim, they could probably direct you where to go on the site to get that. And I mean, you need to spend some time. I don't know how much time you have, but what you do is you just tell the judge, you know, postpone your case. Tell him that you're looking for assistance of counsel, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a lawyer, but get yourself 45 days, and then get your butt busy looking at the paperwork and getting some paperwork made up so that you have something to put in the court. Don't waste those 45. They'll give it to you. They always give it to you. They're happy to give you time. All right.
Okay. 30 days till arraignment. So
we have 3 days till arraignment.
No, this just happened a few days ago. So
yeah, well, the fact of the matter is they still got to give you time to prepare your case. And if you say you need some time because of things that are going on, and you're now looking for assistance of counsel and you don't want them to assign you anybody, you're looking at somebody else, and you need 45 days, and the judge should give you that, you know, whether they arraign you or not. You know, they're going to arraign you no matter. You're not going to be able to stop the arraignment, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you were really a really good litigator, they have to have, what do they call that hearing they have before they arraign you? There's a hearing to make sure that there's it's a probable cause hearing, maybe. Now, you do have an opportunity during that time when they're going to do an arraignment where you can bring up the fact that you have this from the other state and that they do not have jurisdiction and that you plan on taking them to a higher court and that you're going to sue them all. Sometimes it's not a good idea to threaten them in court. The best thing to do is...
is what, you know, I got to stand on my rights and in faith of God, and that's what's up. You know,
but if you tell them you need time for assistance of counseling, you get yourself 45 days, and then the next thing they hear from you is your paper that moving it to the federal court for cause, you can't be held in contempt or anything else. If you get in there and you start telling the judge, I'm going to take you to federal court, I'm suing you and I'm suing the DA and the sheriff and everybody else, they could railroad you into jail real quick, believe me. And especially if you're not a...
That's,
what's that?
I said I have no intentions of being belligerent. And they don't care for that, and I don't care to be that.
But, you know, and one thing about in court, you never threaten, you just do. So I don't even think I would go in and tell them what I was going to do. You know, I would just say, look, I need assistance of counsel. You can mention the fact that, you know, I don't believe that this court has jurisdiction. And, you know, and I have this paper signed by the Secretary of State from this neighboring state over here.
I don't have anything signed by anybody. That's just how it comes up in the NCIS system. Big red letters across that screen when they pull up my name. See, I had a state trooper contact the Secretary of State and do it for them.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I got in that. I'm not sure if I could prove it any other way than through their own system. And I don't have access to that system.
Well, they have access to it. If in other words, if it's true and it works, and they run your name, and it's going to come up, do not, do not stop, do not detain.
For a couple of years now, and they always just tell me to have a nice day so long as I have insurance, and I put my seat on, I drive away.
Well, I don't know. You can mention that in court. How are you going to prove it? They're not going to want to prove it for you. You know what I mean? And so if they're unwilling to run your... Look at, obviously the cop that stopped you ran through the same system that you're telling me about, and it must have come up, do not stop, right? Do you believe that happened?
The thing was, is the license, an Arkansas license that was 25 years ago, an address from 25 years ago. I haven't lived in Arkansas in a large number of time, and that's what he put on the ticket, is a bogus address, and he was using this bogus contract that's been rescinded time ago. I've been in Missouri for quite a while.
So what do you use for a license when they pull you over? How do you identify yourself for them to pull up that sign?
I have
that you had?
I'm a state ID. I don't have a license.
What do you have? I'm sorry, you broke up. I couldn't...
I'm sorry. I got you on speaker here. Let me get my face to the phone here. I got a Missouri State ID.
Okay, so with the Missouri State ID, when they pull it up, that's what comes up, right?
Oh, yeah, big red letters, non-commercial, right across the middle of the screen, right under my face.
So look at you. If you're going to do a suit and you're going to take it to court, you're going to stand on your rights, you're going to put that cop on the stand. And you're going to say, look, if you pull up my Missouri State ID, I don't know what this other thing, who this person is or this contract that you're using. I haven't been in that. I haven't been had that status in 25 years. So you use the bogus license and a bogus address. I mean, that enough is enough to throw the ticket out right there, I think.
Yeah, that's fraud for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would bring all that up and say, look, you use some old information, and I'll tell you right now that if you put in my Missouri State ID, it comes up that I have this status, and you're ignoring it, and I intend to take it to a higher court. So I wouldn't say too much. I would just do it. I'd give them the paperwork. That's how they'll know when they get your paperwork, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, if you had, I don't know what else you could bring into that court with concrete evidence that would impress that judge or scare him into not pursuing it, or the DA for that matter. You know, I mean, the DA is now enabling the cop. So technically you should be able to sue the DA, the cop, and the judge, because once you apprise them of the situation and they keep moving forward, they're guilty. They're guilty of, of all those U.S. codes that they're in disguise. You know what I mean? That they're defrauding you and they're in disguise. They're wearing the cloak of a judge or a police officer or a prosecutor.
That's right. I returned the offers for contract, the charging instruments, marked clearly, refused for cause, no contract, and so on there. And
well, they identify that with sovereign citizen, unfortunately, because that's the schooling that they get. You know, the judges get that schooling, and the cops get that schooling, and you know who's schooling them. Is stupid organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's where they're getting their information from. So that's what you're up against, which is they're actually nobody. They have no authority whatsoever, and they're really bad. But anyway, keep it above board and respectful, and just state your case and speak in the paperwork, because you have less chance of getting in trouble with your paperwork. And get yourself some studying.
I have the judge's fax number and his phone number, and I'm just trying to decide which way to go, if I'm going to do this common law abatement or do some sort of affidavit, you know, challenging jurisdiction or just show up in court.
My suggestion would be to move the case to federal court for cause. And when they see that coming through, moving to the federal court, a lot of times they will drop the case. That's enough for them. And a lot of times when the federal judge gets the case in federal court, he'll call down and say, look, get this case out of my court, dismiss it, get rid of this guy. You know what I mean? They don't want to bother with you. But just be careful. When you do that case, you got to stick just to the facts of the violation of your due process rights, what they did in particular that violated your status and that violated, you know, that they took jurisdiction they didn't have. That's what you got. That's your issue right there. And that should be
easy. So I don't need to bring up any of the other crimes of 18 U.S.C. 241, 242, conspiracy and kidnapping and all that kind of thing.
I think that would be, well, conspiracy and kidnapping and all that. You know, look at when you take the case to the federal court, you could mention all that stuff because that is in, you know, that's your wherefore. That's what's due you since they violated you. But you know,
deprivation of rights under color of law.
There you go. That's right. They took my
property without due process.
As a matter of fact, when you go to federal court and they want to see some of those statutes on the front page, if they don't see that, they don't like to take the case. When you go to the federal court, they're pretty helpful when you go there. They got a clerk there. And as a matter of fact, John went in one time and he said, oh, no, here, use this one. The guy actually helped him fill the paperwork out and said, you know, you got to mention, you know, USC this and USC that way, because that's the type of cases that they have jurisdiction over.
I was under the impression that once you started quoting statute that you lost your standing in common law.
Well, who says that? Who knows that? Does the judge know that? I don't believe that. That's a magic word thing. In other words, is he going to tell you quoted a statute so you lost your standing in common law, and you're going to bring up the fact that you got this thing that comes up in the state where you've declared your sovereignty, and it comes up on your ID, do not stop or detain. They're going to deny that? I don't think they'll do that. You know what I mean?
All right.
There's a lot of stuff out there that's like, look at court. What's court? Court is a play act. It's for the king used to have court just so that the people would entertain the people, and it would give him an excuse to do what he was going to do and kind of make him look better. You know what I mean? Instead of just cutting somebody's head off, he'd go through this trial. Well, court is your opportunity to run your play across. So, you know, there's these preconceived things. Oh, you quoted a statute. You stepped on the crack. You broke your mother's back. That's not really the way it works, because that judge is more ignorant than you are. You need to educate him. And so you have a certain poetic license to do those things. These absolutes that people are telling you in the sovereign movement, they're wrong, because that's not the way the real world works. I mean, if it really worked that way, you wouldn't be in this trouble in the first place, because they wouldn't have violated you. If they're gonna hold up your standing in a court, and you can lose it by quoting a statute, that you can't lose what you never had to begin with. Okay, that's my point.
Yeah.
They're really not going by that. These guys go crazy. Oh, don't quote this and don't quote that. Well, you definitely can quote that, because that's their law. Even, you know, it's not even necessarily that you're quoting it. You say, even by your own statutes, you did wrong. That's all. You got this law on the books, and basically I'm quoting it because it fits what you did to me.
Well, in my mind, I need to quote these statutes for the tort.
That's right. That's the easiest way to do it. I've been harmed and
damaged. And
I would not be afraid to quote those statutes at all. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you that when you go in the federal court, the federal judge is looking for that. Okay?
Yeah. And Supreme Court decisions and all that. I've got plenty of ammo. I mean, I got a battleship ready to go.
All right. Practice with the paperwork and talk to somebody and see if you can move it to federal court for cause. I think that's the best way. I mean, it's not the only way, but I think it's the quickest, easiest way for you, to get it out of their court. There's no justice over there. They're already against you. You need to move it away from them, and that's the best way that I know how. All right.
Okay. Well, that judge, he can deny that.
No, they got no choice. The only thing they can do to you, and they shouldn't, because as a matter of fact, you may want to ask for an injunction in the federal court when you go there. You're filing a paper in a higher court against that court. He's got no say. How could he deny it? Because that means you can't go to a higher court. You're not asking him, you're telling him. And you're filing a paper in the federal court, and you could even ask the federal judge for an emergency injunction to stop the proceedings until the case is decided, which they should do anyway. If you're suing them in a federal court for jurisdiction of that, they need to stop everything until they answer that, okay?
Absolutely.
And he cannot deny it. No, the answer is an absolute no. He cannot.
Great. Good.
Okay.
I'm glad I've had the opportunity to talk with you. I appreciate you.
Okay. Have a good night. It's good talking to you, and bring us up to date next time. Okay.
I sure will. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Take it easy, John.
You too.
Okay. Next person we got is Janet. I don't know from where. Janet, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Great. I'm in Pinellas County, Florida, and I was just looking at the board for Florida, and was looking to see who the county organizer is in Pinellas, and I don't see anybody listed, so I'm assuming that position is not currently filled.
That's probably right. We may have had somebody, and they were inactive, so we took them out or something. I don't know if nobody's listed, probably nobody's there, I would think.
Okay. Well, I would be willing to talk to somebody about being in that position if it is open.
Well, the best thing to do is get a hold of Jan.
Okay.
And tell him what you want to do, and he'll direct you to the right place. And they'll also be able to look up and see who's over there, just in case for some reason our records aren't right, but I think they are. I think if nobody's listed, you're going to find that it's open. And we would certainly love for you to take it. We're looking for a warm body.
Okay. Yes, I see that. Okay. Yeah, I'll get a hold of him. I have his email.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. Dan from Carolina, how you doing? You've been unmuted.
Mr. Gerard, I actually was hoping that my guy out of Carolina, David, I tried to get him on last week, and I called him this evening, and I'm just wondering if he's in the queue. It's a
I have no David in the queue right now, and if I don't have a name, I would have a number. So everybody has a name. I don't see David, and I don't see any phone number.
Yeah, it'd be a 910 area code there for where he's located in North Carolina.
Oh, that's the same as yours, 910, right?
Right, sure is.
He's not in the queue. I don't know if he doesn't know how to get in the queue.
I don't know. I tried to educate him about that in the past, and I thought he was quite aware. I talked to him this evening, and it's concerning some of the questions that we had last week, and actually there's been other times, too, that different ones were coming up with questions that this could certainly help them. And we had a little tiny discussion last time, you remember, and it started with March 9th, 1933, and also then there was also some discussion about, martial law, and I thought you pinpointed that answer very good there, with the fact that, if we're not having, and God forbid this to happen, if we have a foreign government coming in here on our shore and in regards, then martial law is instated automatically. Mm-hmm. And it comes through each and every attorney general's office of all the states of the union, which
right.
is. And then there was also where he, if we can ever get him on here, where he can really walk through the process in regard to someone making a loan and actually the format of what happens. The bankers are technically don't have that inventory when you come in to borrow, say, $300,000 or $100,000 or half a million or whatever, and they take your own credit and collateral is the better word, and
right.
and collateralize
so it's,
it.
It's fraud right off the top, I understand.
Yes, it is.
And,
sure is. And then, too.
That's hard to argue with these judges that don't want to hear that, but yeah, go ahead.
There is a specialist. I'll have to look in my archives a little better, but years ago I came across a specialist out, I think he's in Arizona, out in that area. And forgive me for this, I don't have any stock or any business relationship with this individual, but the last part of this appellation, this individual, seemed like to me is Tom Scharf or something to that nature out of Arizona. And if anyone ever gets him on their case and they put him on the stand, it's quesadilla, I'll tell you that. Let's see, it's a better word than that. That in law, that it's over with. And res judicata.
Right.
And because he can absolutely walk by testimony all the way through and explain it like so simplistic. And there's been a lot of people have won cases as to the result of. The next thing is there's the fiat money that they are predicated there of lending anyway, which is not, you know, lawful money technically, even though Congress has bowed and allowed the Bilderbergers, in essence, to coin money and print money and et cetera.
Yeah, promise to pay, basically.
Yes, sir. And anybody that's hearing this tonight, I hope you understand, we think that we're on the turn here in this nation to coming to more and more, thanks to Mr. John Durash and Gerard and others there that are behind the scenes here, to bring our nation to a dealing in truth and according to what our Heavenly Father intended for us. And, you know, we're over 200 years now in from the birth of this nation. It's time. It's well over time. I'll bring you back to March 9, 1933, and boy, I wish we had David on here. He could really bring some people to and why they should be on this every Monday night, because if you get the understanding of about what you call your so-called weekly or monthly or bi-monthly paycheck, and which is fiat monies, and then you understand that it's just not it's a sin for us to be trading when our kids that are not born, as to result of something this very weekend. And the last time I mentioned, if you just went to a little convenient market and got some bread and milk, it doesn't matter, gasoline or any other substance, or going to doctors or going to hospitals or your mortgage, it's all of it. It doesn't matter what you're, you know, involved with. The truth of the matter is that when it comes down to it, you technically cannot pay for a substance for substance, so you cannot lawfully enter into a contract purchase a car, mm-hmm. or buy a wedding gift or a wedding ring or an engagement ring or anything you want to think about. Buy clothes for your family, food. it is all a situation where a portion of that contract is laid out in the future for an innocent child that's not even yet born that will come into play, and is factored in for that newborn child to have to pay off the debt as to a purchase or alleged purchase, I guess you'd call it, of something here today that they didn't get any party to. They didn't receive any benefits or anything.
Yeah, it's like an adhesion contract. It is.
You know, and a lot of these people that you educate about, a lot of times we're hearing about the driver's license and things of that sort, and some people, you know, certainly say, I'm not in commercial entity, and thanks to my profession, I'm just a private person on the land out here, and I have right to travel. I'm not in no commercial setting, and so I shouldn't have to be involved with an adhesion contract with the state of North Carolina and to get a driver's license and then to put tags on my car, and then when you go get a purchase a car on top of that, if you can call it purchasing, alleged to purchasing, you don't get the manufacturer's certificate of origin. You get a certificate of title, but the actual manufacturer's original certificate of title remains with the state. So you're technically, a lot of people don't know this, they're riding these state roads and they're driving a state, the state owns the vehicles, the government owns the vehicles, and we think that, I just bought me a brand new Corvette, or I just brought me a nice van for my family to go on vacation with. These people are just absolutely needing to wake up. And this is more reasons why, if we can get David on here, it sounded that I was covering a lot of subjects, and I was to a certain degree. But if we can get David on here, we can settle down to maybe these people will start seeing why they need to fill these phones up on Monday night, and the other reasons that you were talking about earlier for getting educated to a point for either this Thursday night, I don't know the straight of it, as or either it's next Thursday, as to about this illegal, what we think is inoculation that's not been tested. And I mean, who in the world would want to put strange products into their body intravenously and that's not been tested? I mean, that is supposed to be, our government is supposed to be testing these products before they can ever be let, and for the safety of the people.
I just want to say something here.
Go ahead.
We get lost in the minutia of that, because the fact of the matter is the federal government has no authority to tell you to put anything in your body, even water. You see, it's dangerous, it has human DNA, which it does. All those things are true. And yes, it's noxious and everything else. But they have no authority to force you to put anything in your body. And that's where we're losing these cases, because they're outside of their jurisdiction to even say or to do that. You know, the most thing the government could do to protect the people in a town, let's say, is if they can verify that you had some communicable disease, they could have you quarantine in your house.
Quarantine.
And that's all they can do. And they should allow you to self-quarantine. Although they can make sure you never leave your property. They can put a post out there. They can bring food in. That's legal, because that is protect. Look at, by you going out with a communicable disease and spreading it to your neighbor, you're violating his rights. So one of the main job of government is to protect us from other people violating our rights, so stepping on our rights. So in that sense, they do have an authority, but that's it. All this, it's all ballooned into this crazy thing. And the other thing is I don't encourage people to go and try to go to court and fight like the credit card company or even the title thing with the car until they're so educated and so comfortable that they can roll, like you say, like this guy does. He rolls through the law. Look, at you're driving a car that you already got a title for, that they own the car. So technically, you've entered into a contract. Now you're going to go to court and you're going to argue, I'm a sovereign citizen. I'm disconnected. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, everything says you're connected. You got all this documentation that says you're running in their system. And they're not going to let, it doesn't matter what you say, your actions speak louder than words. You got a set of tags on it, you got a title, you got this, which says that they own it. So unless you're not going to do that, you know, you're not pristine. You're playing, you got 1 foot in the door and 1 foot out of the door. And they're going to, you know what happens? I took judo for many years, and the worst thing you could do is stand on one leg, because that's when you get the leg knocked out from under you.
You know, you mentioned the last couple of times that I've been on here to some of these people, and some really good advice. Just even though I'm bringing this up as truth, and you're aware of it, and know this probably as good as I do about the drive, the adhesion contracts and things, and various things. There was a lady that came on, and she spent, I don't know, a long time. It was right at the 11th hour, so to speak, of our conference. And she wanted us to give her, or at least Mr. John Drash, some point of direction as to maybe an agency or something that could give her a blanket coverage no matter which state she went into, that she would not have any trouble with those corporations that we find ourselves in trouble with through the adhesion contract. And I wish I could have hit a button, because that night, me and Mr. Jan talked about this later. That lady, about the only answer for her and a few others if they want to go to this point would be to do a quiet title of her person. That means of her body. She has to then know how to put legal notice into the local newspaper where she's located. Even with that, you have pointed out, due to the time and where we are all thinking pretty certainly that there's going to be some really nice changes about the IRS and about the income tax and the definitions of what income is and what isn't. And as to those people that would be responsible in, you know, with various laws that we have for paying to Uncle Sam, let's say, and versus those that technically are paying, but they have no clue, and they're paying, and they do it under threat, stress, and coercion. Exactly. when in fact, but still, the point I'm trying to make is you spell this out. Those people that want to make some big waves out of it could cause themselves, even though they're standing up for truth, could cause themselves right now in the stream of times we're in some bad headaches. They could actually go to jail, as you folks have told them many times. And so we're so close. A lot of these things that are supposed to be corrected, or should be corrected, I'd say. We're certain that with Donald Trump, our eminent president there of all times, and we certainly think that, especially what you guys have said in advice, you might want to not act too up when a highway patrolman or something, you know, stops. You've told, in so many different ways that you've expressed to these people, you know, to understand that the end results of what I'm saying can, and we feel like, is in the works and is starting to come. Because I'll put it to you this way: if we get across the nation a fair tax, then I don't care who you are, the tax will not discriminate against anyone when they want a lollipop or they want a gallon of milk or they want anything else, and they will probably feel a lot prouder, and we're not supposed to feel proud according to the Bible, but are more appreciative of, you know, when they do get these substances, that there's no hidden agenda and they got it for their family. And so I hope with those things that a fair tax will come. And a lot of things are unfortunate, and Mr. Donald Trump knows about this, about the estates that have been stolen from farmers that were been in operation, Mr. Gerard, for 400 years, and steal these farms with some kind of bad situation of sending all the seed, the corn, quality corn seed, down to South America, and they have a bumper crop, the next thing they fill our markets over here with the corn. And those is just one example. That's just, I mean, there's so many countless situations of where that our farmers have caught it, but yet our farmers really have also got some programs going on, and some of these corporations, CEOs up there for the last several years, and then some, have been starting to go into farming business.
Yeah, it's bad.
And, yeah. You know, because of the programs that the farmers do have. So,
yeah,
nevertheless.
Every federal program they give them, there's always strings attached.
Yes, sir.
If you take the program, they're going to tell you what to do, and now you're beholden to them. And they do the same thing. And they do it. They even do it to the local law enforcement. They take control of your sheriff by giving him a federal grant. And in that grant, he has to sign off his authority. If something goes on, he's signing off to them saying that he will bow to his jurisdiction, to their jurisdiction. And so that's something that we got to do as local people to make sure that the sheriff is not signing off his authority to some federal grant, to get a grant for some something that's only going to militarize his police force anyway. He doesn't need that crap, you know what I mean? And, you know,
I want to comment for just a second, you know, it's sad, but with our sheriff departments across 3,133, I believe that's right, counties, you won't believe this, and I know this for several states at least, and I think it's just prevalent when you think about it, universal almost across, you know, our nation, all the Union states, that these sheriffs have an actual starting a lot of times about Thursday. They start a hit list of various ones, and they will round these people up, put them in jail. The next thing is that they're going to say, well, we got as many as we could, the judge, to arraignment. You're going to have to stay over to next week. And they keep those people in there under some false charges, or even if they have legitimate charges. They go round these people up and put them what I call Motel 6. And it's sad, but we the people have to pay on a yearly basis for each minute and every second and every day that that particular person is kept under those officers. And that's what, and the federal government's got it set up to where big checks come to back to these jailhouses, to these sheriffs. A lot of people don't know this, and we need a lot of the people that's being held in jail. Absolutely, in some cases, are less criminals than the criminals that put them there. I'm talking about the judges and
the DAs
and stuff.
Yeah, you see it every day.
And they have to fill their quota, those judges. And then, you know, we won't say anymore, but then the sheriff is a lackey for the judge and the corporations that own these courtrooms. They have to pay those judges way up there. Some of them can be way more than $160,000, $180,000 in that range.
Well, we found evidence where the judges were getting kickbacks for whoever they put in the prison. they're part of that prison industrial complex, and every man he puts in prison, and that's a conflict right there. How can a judge make money on throwing you in jail? That's like I mean, that's so bad that would that
they're, well they do it out of expectation of what the corporation is paying them, their salary. And a lot of people don't know this, the highway patrolmen are foreign enemy agents. I have nothing against the highway patrolmen, but I do when the fact the laws state that the sheriff of each county that knows the people are the ones that are supposed to be writing the tickets. And so still there's a certain benefit by the highway patrolmen being out there on our roads to help, you know, our society and you know, emergencies and things of that sort. But still, again, we have that quota situation, and that highway patrolman is under pressure to write those tickets. The same thing is with these judges, and I'll close with this one. I know this for a fact. I've seen judges, you go in the courtroom, little probable cause hearing, the next thing is they hold their signature, they make a judgment right then and there, as in your case, but they hold their signature back 31 days, I think it is, to 35, somewhere along in there. In other words, and so the litigant is being violated because he cannot technically appeal the case because it's gone past 30 days.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of that?
I think I have heard something to that effect.
And they'll sign NUNC, N-U-N-C, little letters, space, pro, P-R-O, little space again, TUNC, T-U-N-C, NUNC, proton, N-U-N-C-P-R-O. There's three words there, NUNC, proton, T-U-N-C. Yes, sir, I've seen that more than one time, and, you know, it
and
just...
NUNC, proton, what's the meaning of that? That's Latin.
It means I'm signing this... the judge says, I'm signing, all right, let's give an example. The case was, say, heard today, the 2nd, and they wait till April 3rd or something like that, or the 5th, somewhere along there. So when they put their signature, they're saying, and they put the words nunc pro tunc after judge so-and-so, whatever, and most of them will not put their Christian appellation. I don't think there are Christians anyway, very few of them.
Right.
But anyway, I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, what do I know? But anyway, I know enough that I've seen too many signatures of these judges, okay? And so what happens is they sign April the 2nd or 3rd or 5th, somewhere along there, after his appellation of whoever he scratches on there that he is, which is a misnomer every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so... They put nunc pro tunc, meaning, to answer your question, I'm signing right now for then. And of course, the date of the hearing is in the document. So they're signing 31 or 35 days later the document to be, that was heard 31 or 35 days earlier, but they get around to it. Signing it 31 to 35 days late, and as to the hearing that took place on that prior date.
So that's designed so that you can't appeal it. Is that
absolutely? Right? You got it. Exactly.
You have 30 days to appeal it.
Right.
And he's signing it today for then. That sounds
exactly.
Like fraud in the hole right there.
Well, what you can do is you certainly could carry this to the Judicial Standards Commission in Raleigh and whatever they call it in other states. I have no clue, but you certainly can carry a judge for, and I think that is a primary example of what is called violation of due process of law.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, we filled in a little bit of things here. Thank you for the extra time. I really had rather the David, his first name basis, and I don't know why. Maybe he fell asleep again. A lot of times I fight with him to try to keep him awake, But he is a powerhouse, and he can explain back better than anybody I've ever seen or heard about Congress and how they, you know, are standing in resolution rather than, I call it positive law, and he calls it something else, but it all means the same thing.
Well, we'll get him on here one night when John is here,
sure.
too. Because John.
Oh, that would be wonderful. By the way, in closing, I better yield here because we spent more time here than I normally do. But Mr. John, is he okay?
Well, he's got like a cold, a chest cold. Or
whatever, okay. All right.
So
well, he needs
serious.
Some time off.
Yeah.
If there's anyone needs it, me and Jen have been praying about him, and you know that he just ordinarily needs to have some rest. And you're doing a fabulous job. I have to say, there and on every night when you work with him, and then too every night that you know that by your, I guess you call your, you know, individual capacity.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Dan. Oh, the other thing I was going to say before you go, there is their own. The Federal Reserve has their own little booklet that basically is an indictment. It's called Modern Money Mechanics, and they explain exactly that fiat dollar, which is basically an indictment of their own system. It's
I got to write that down.
Next time, I just saw it on a YouTube video, and I'll get the name. I think it's called Modern Money Mechanics, and it's one of their own publications that basically lays out this fiat dollar, and in there, they don't lie. They tell you exactly what they're doing, which is the fraud that you're talking about. So maybe we can get deeper into that next time, okay?
Okay. Quick question on that. Is it possibly a video or is it documentary like in print form?
Well, no, it's been around. It is a document, but there are videos on it. I think if you went into YouTube and put on Modern Money Mechanics, it would probably come up.
How about that?
It's been around, and so...
Thank you.
Who I was listening to, he said, you know, get their own publication where they explain, you know, that promise to pay business in the fiat dollar. And it's, and look, at one thing they do is they do tell the truth about what they're doing to us. Okay.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well,
right.
That's a revelation that I haven't heard lately.
This is what we're going to do, and we're too stupid to take them to task. But anyway, we got some other people.
By all means, let's yield to those.
Okay.
I went a little extra there, but let's yield right now.
Okay. Have a good night, Dan.
You too. Always. You too.
Yeah. Okay, Jay from North Carolina. How you doing? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Hey, Gerard. There's a couple things. One, I wanted to know how John got that KMA status with Missouri. If he could get back in the queue and tell how he got that status with Missouri, that would be interesting.
Uh-huh.
And another thing, I'm also from North Carolina. When a fellow that was just talking mentioned the fair tax, my hackles go up.
I know what you're talking about because even a flat tax is illegal. They're not allowed to tax your income, period.
But I believe a fair tax is a way to transmit all of the tax burden on the poor people. I spend 100% of my money to survive. Rich people don't. So if you're getting taxed by what you spend, I'll be taxed on 100% of what I have. And the rich people who can live off of 1.1% of their earnings will get taxed on 1% of their earnings while I'm getting taxed on 100% of mine. So,
well, Jay, the whole problem is what's the definition of income?
Yeah.
You see, that's where they get you, because income is not what people think it is. Income is passive money. It's not on your salary. Your salary
profit
is not
or gains of corporate activity.
That's right. So if you have interest or you got stocks and you're getting dividends and stuff, that's income. That's the
profit.
Only thing they can tax.
Yep.
And of course we know, you know, rich people, they have lots of income, don't they?
my income, my labor, my wage is a fair trade, even exchange for
right.
my labor.
I forget the name of the guy, but I'll find out for you. And he talks about that they actually have a section in the IRS code that talks about minus expenses. And he's taking it to court. So technically, your expense is the time that you spent earning your wage, and that's supposed to be deductible off the top of your whatever form, your W-2, whatever you're filing. So technically, it's a wash. There is no income because your labor is your expense, and you could write your expenses off. And there's a section of the code that nobody ever bothers filling out in the beginning. And there's a guy that's been in court, and he's done I'm having a senior moment. But he's got some excellent videos on, you know, this whole business. And he's been into the court with the IRS, and he's beat them a couple times too. But he says, look, they don't even talk about when you first start out, getting through your expenses, you're supposed to deduct your expense, which is your labor that you traded with your boss for that salary. That's an expense. Huh. And they can't tell you that you can't write your expense off. It's as simple as that. Anyway, if you know, I got to make notes because there's a couple things here. The Modern Money Mechanics, this business here, I got to find you the guy's name that runs through the cases. He's very good, you know, as far as a title, what do you call it, the IRS code. Is it 26? He's an expert on their own words. He uses them against them all the time. So.
But that guy from North Carolina, I agreed with 99% of what he said until he mentioned the fair tax. Hoping that we would get that fair tax, and my hackles just stood up, and I went, oh, my God, I got to get in the queue.
Well, you made it.
and I'm hoping and praying that Donald Trump does away with this whole corrupt system. So.
Well, you know, and look, he's bringing the top down. It's up to us to bring the bottom up. And there's other strategies we haven't even talked about, you know, as far as becoming you know, sovereign, so to speak. I hate to use that word because that's a buzzword for them. You know, that's a terrorist word as far as they're concerned.
Well, go ahead.
Well, a lot of what they do to us because we're ignorant, and as far as like there's things you can do with car titles and things, and there's a lot that nobody knows. I mean, I know guys that have gotten cars that went from state to state that the title didn't get transferred. In other words, the state no longer has title to them, and they're not in their system. And you could grab one of those things from a dealer with no paperwork that follows through, and they pull you over, and they put that VIN number in, and they can't find that. So when they put that VIN number in and they can't find it, guess what? They have no jurisdiction over it, do they? And there's a way to pass cars through a couple dealerships. And I think after 10 years, that all expires anyway, because if you ever notice, in New York State, they don't want the mileage on a car that's over 10 years old. I think that 10 years also has something to do with that whole title contract thing. I think it runs out after 10 years. So if you got a car that's older than 10 years and you don't register it and you can keep the title out of the state's hands, You got a machine that they don't own anymore. You know what I mean?
We need
to look into that because that could be a method of going out there and they pull you over with this car that you don't have. You know, if you're going to play that game, and it's kind of like Dan said, you know, we're getting close to Trump doing something. So for us to go out and do those things at this point, you're going to end up in jail. And is it really worth doing it? But once the top starts coming down and more of this is out there, then you feel safer doing this stuff, and you don't mind arguing it in court when you got some precedent up there from the president, you know what I mean, giving us the rule of law back. That's what I'm saying. You might actually win the case.
I heard of a guy that sued I heard of a guy that sued the state and got back all of his maintenance money that he put in the car because he was saying it's their car.
Well, it is their car, so they are, you're right, they are liable for the repairs. You know, I don't know any judge that would fine for that, though. I think they would take him out, and he would be, he'd be like that guy that founded the Homeland Security there, that was going to give testimony against Obama, saying that he got rid of all the work they did, and that's why we got hit with 9/11, these other terrorist attacks. So they killed him in his car this past week, last Friday. I don't know if you heard that. One of the original Department of Homeland Security guys, and he was coming to Washington to give all the evidence to Trump and the guys that Obama and them facilitated these terrorists. Got rid of all their information out of the system so they couldn't track them. What's that?
He was head of Homeland Security when Bush was in office?
He was the original founder of it after 9/11.
Chernoff. And they put,
not Chernoff, this guy just got killed last Friday, but he was one of the top guys in coordinating the FBI and the CIA and that, and he worked on coordinating them to prevent terrorists and trading information and keeping track of these terrorists. He was actually a good guy, you know, in the
I think his name was Haney.
Yes, it was Haney. I was just clicking through my I don't know why my computer is so terrible tonight, but I saved the video. And look, the guy was 62 years old. He was getting ready to be remarried. He didn't commit suicide. And the cops on the scene said it was a suicide, but then the coroner said, I didn't say it was a suicide. And the police officer doesn't determine death. So that coroner stuck his neck way out. Look, they killed this guy because he was going to give testimony against Obama and Clinton, basically. And, you know, you don't get away with that. That's what they do. So now they got to watch this coroner because he's basically, you know, doing a real investigation.
Uh-huh.
So.
Well, on a different note, I've got my daughter-in-law, or my daughter-outlaw. Her boyfriend has been in all kinds of trouble with our county, Yancey County, and the sheriff is as corrupt as can be, and they're running him through the system. And I mean, I've got when he recorded when the sheriff pulled him over,
mm-hmm.
and he kept asking, what do we do wrong? What do we do wrong, Gary? Why'd you pull us over, Gary? What's going on, Gary? And he kept asking him that. What are you doing? What do we do? And finally Gary said, that's it. You're going to jail too, and arrested him. And then they charged him with 2 ounces of meth and amphetamine, which was not there. And they don't have it in evidence. And your phone or my phone?
I don't know. That's got some terrible disturbance there. That was horrible.
But now he plea bargained with them and was basically let go with time served, and he had to wear an ankle bracelet forever. And now supposedly they changed the date on a parole hearing, and he missed it. And now they're dragging him back into court. They're about to throw him in prison.
Oh boy.
And I keep telling him he needs to get on this site and, you know, learn, you know, and they, you know, I don't know. I don't know why our ranks aren't growing by leaps and bounds. I can't get any of my friends to look into it. They don't care, you know.
Well, look, there's a lot of mental programming going on every day, especially if you're watching the news. And then, don't forget, you know, we're inundated with fluoride, which makes you compliant.
Docile.
And so, you know, there's many, many reasons why people aren't getting off their derrieres. And usually it's a combination of reasons, you know. So, look, you know, I'm surprised that the Patriot movement is doing as well as it is doing, you know, in spite of everything. And only by the grace of God interceding, I think. Otherwise, you know, we would never have a chance against them as far as, you know, if they get to the point where they're implementing everything they want to implement, their 5G and all this other stuff they're going to be using against us.
Well, tomorrow's Super Tuesday. What's his name? He's going to make a comeback tomorrow. Biden.
Boom. Biden. Good luck with that.
They're going to rise from the dead. Biden's going to be...
Look at he's. I think.
I want to see Bernie. I mean, they stole the election from Bernie last year, you know, or last cycle. They stole the election from Bernie, and I'm going, oh my God, Bernie's the man. This is gonna be good.
It's scary to see that there's people out there that actually want that Marxist socialist guy to be president.
Yeah.
That's the scary part, that people actually believe this crap.
Yeah.
You know, after all the, you know, after Marx and Lenin and Mao Zedong and this one and that one, I mean, we know where that stuff goes. It always leads to the same stuff. I mean, how stupid can you be? And that's one of the reasons I have respect for Putin, because when Obama would say stupid stuff, Putin would turn around and say, I don't know what he thinks he's talking about, because we've tried that stuff here for 80 years and we know it doesn't work, and he's acting like it's a new idea. That's Putin talking about Obama. Anyway, that guy's name was Haney, the whistleblower that was found dead. If you go to YouTube and put DHS whistleblower Phil Haney, all kinds of, you know, talks that he did. He wrote a couple books, See Something, Say Nothing, and very good. But they wanted to shut him up because he had evidence that is damning to Obama and Hillary. And you can't mention them without getting the wrath of them down on you, you know. So...
Well, I think I'm going home this weekend, so I'll find out more what's going on with this friend of mine. But oh my God, what they're gonna do to him? Our county is so corrupt; it's insane. And
I mean, I don't know. If they railroaded him on drugs and they don't even have him in evidence, why would you do a plea bargain? I mean, I know you wanted to stay out of jail, but now they're trying to railroad him back in, so it was like, what's the point?
Yep.
What he should do is he should withdraw his plea bargain, because they're going to put him back in jail and say, look, I want to see the evidence. You know what I mean? But anyway, I don't know. I don't know anything about the case, but it's just a shame. I mean, I know people do too.
I've been trying to get him to do an affidavit of all of the things they've done to him over the last, like, 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can't get out of trouble. And I know, I mean, he's living in my backyard. He doesn't get in any trouble, you know?
Mm.
He's working on cars and pretty much doesn't go anywhere, and he's a good kid, and he doesn't get into trouble. But the sheriff's got this vendetta against him, and they just keep coming after him. Every time he leaves the house, he gets searched. You know? He gets pulled over, he gets harassed, he gets searched, he gets...
I don't know what to tell you, you know what I mean? It's like... What are you gonna do?
Well, like I said, I keep getting on him about trying to do an affidavit of all of the violations, all of the things that's happened to him over this whole course of time. they need to get out of the county, and they need to probably take it to federal court.
Yeah, that's
figure
right.
out what's going on with the sheriff. But
yeah, yeah.
All right, Gerard. That's all.
Okay,
I got.
Jay, you have a good night. Good hearing from you, buddy.
Yep, have a good one.
Okay, we got Tamara from Florida. Go ahead, you're unmuted.
It's Tamara in Arizona now. Get that straight, brother.
Oh, it says Florida here. I'm only reading what my board says. You moved on.
Yeah,
no.
I okay. did. I'm going
well,
to
I'll
spend
stay.
All
I don't know.
Wondering where I am.
hopefully, we can get that straightened out.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll probably go back to Florida soon anyway. But
just when we get it straightened out, you'll move back, right?
Yeah.
I get Terry can there. She just straightened it out. It says Arizona now, so you're good. You're good now for next time until you change it again.
Until I change it again, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what question I want to ask at this point because I think most of them have already been answered through everyone speaking. But I did want to question the first caller because I am working on a method by which I can obtain this do not detain list status. It's like a delegatory type of a status. I don't know if that's the right
there is so much information out there on that. There's so many different people that do it. I don't know if you can trust everybody, but it's all basically the same when once you learn the basics of it.
Yeah, what I was looking at, I think, is through the passport and the way with which you fill that out and possibly attaching an explanatory statement of some certain facts. And I question it, though, because I had called in and asked them at one point, you know, am I listed as a state citizen of the state of California, because that's where I was born. And the woman, it was a supervisor, she told me that I was listed as a state citizen. And I'm just going to go ahead and redo my passport, though, with the knowledge that I have now and try to just secure it because I understand the definitions to what it means to be a driver and why it's required to have a driver license and what it means to be a driving in a commercial vehicle.
Right.
And I don't do any of that. And I am willing to take my faith and put my works to practice and do the work and for studying because I know the maximum of law says
but
that.
Don't forget. That guy got to his status. He got pulled over and they arrested him anyway because he happened to have an old license in that state and look at this cop knew that it would come up, do not stop, do not detain. So he didn't use that ID that he gave him. He went and found an old driver's license and used that. And that's what you're up against.
Yeah, so to fight that, would we then have to resend the driver's license?
No. He should sue that cop because the cop is used. Look at it. If they got the wrong name and address and the wrong document and it's a fraud because he doesn't have that license as a contract, he's using a contract that was rescinded and expired.
Yeah, and that's actually a violation of Title 18, subsection 242.
Yeah, I mean, look at he needs to personally sue the cop and the judge and everybody else and bring it into federal court. That's what you got to do.
But
just because you have that status doesn't mean you're not going to have any trouble. Look at there's a lady that has that knows all the paperwork to fill out, and she does it pretty pristine using the UCC and all this other stuff that John doesn't like to get involved with. And her name is April Lejeune, and I think you can send her money, and she'll fill the paperwork out for you, but it goes to the Secretary of State, and it goes here, and it goes there. And, yeah, you get this status, and then you become what they call a secure party creditor, and you can even become your own private banker. She's got some kind of scheme that she does there. I think that out of everybody I ever listened to, and like I said, you can do all that stuff, and you can end up in shackles, okay?
So,
what the the warning that I'm going to give everybody is, you know, it's coming to an end anyway. Just have patience.
Yeah.
Timing
yeah,
is everything. Timing. Look, there is going to be a time when you should take this to court, because once they get these evil judges out and they get some judges that will go by the rule of law, you should be able to go in there and explain this status thing that you're not you don't have a contract with them and blah blah blah, and it should be very easy to go through those motions, and the judge should clearly see it. It should be a no-brainer at some point, and it is going to happen, because once they recognize the rule of law, then all the other stuff kind of goes in the toilet. You know?
Yeah, I kind of have a situation like that today where I was with my son and my cousin, and we went into the Department of Motor Vehicles, and I've been discussing, and we've all been learning together, and so we kind of have this basic concept of what it means to, although we don't, as common law, living souls do not have to do these things. You should think it's a given, but we reserve our rights with our signatures, you know, with the UCC, use of the UCC 1-308. And they ask us today, you know, what are you doing? And my son just kept signing. And I said, he's reserving his rights. And she's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, under the Uniform Commercial Code 1-308, we have a right to ensure that we reserve all rights that we have under common law. And we're also reserving our rights and saying that the signature is not negotiable to be taken up for any other purposes. This is it. And I said, and then also further goes on to say that we don't consent to contract with you. And so he signed, you know, with the UD and everything. And so that's how we're taking our stand.
Well, I've seen clerks in the motor vehicle office and in the county clerk's office that would refuse to issue a license signed like that, because it's exactly what you just said. And because you're not contracting with them. And as far as they're concerned, that license is a contract. So by signing it like that, you're rescinding the contract that you're purporting to go into with them.
Right.
And technically that license is null and void when you sign it like that.
Right. That's exactly
so
right.
Any clerk or whatever motor vehicle person that understands that, they're not supposed to let you do that, because it defeats the purpose of the driver's license.
That's right. And, well, they let us do it.
Well, that's only because they were ignorant, so you got away with it, and that's good. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's only good if you get somebody that understands what it means.
Yeah, that's why I then educate them as quickly as I can.
You know,
it's all
this secret voodoo. We shouldn't have to go through all these crazy...
Exactly.
Jump through all these crazy hoops to be free, but you know, and hopefully that's all coming to an end soon, because it's either that or we're going to have a revolution or something. I don't know. You know,
no,
what I mean?
That 2 weeks ago. That's interesting. You're saying that.
So, well, you know, look, at the more people that wake up, the quicker it'll be and the better it'll be. And we can only hope. I didn't think I'd ever see it in my lifetime, but you know, now I actually have some hope.
Yeah, I went from having all of this misaligned knowledge, not realizing I was being lied to, and then being dumped onto the ground and then rising above it again. And now I'm like, I'm just waiting.
It's a process. It really is. And it does take a lot out of you, and you can get hurt doing it. But
yes.
it's not for the faint of heart either, is it?
Truth be told.
Yeah. So... anyway, just be careful. That's all I learned. Be careful.
Yeah,
And look, we're almost at the end here, so let's get to the end of the race. Don't get yourself jammed up just before the freedom comes, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, at some point, it would be nice if we could all go in there en masse and inundate them with all these cases that they can't answer.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about doing. A friend of mine and my son and my cousin
were
all.
It's always better to do things in a group. Always better. Because they don't know how to deal with that. And if you come in at it with a group. And that's why NLA is going to be successful, because we're a group of people throughout the United States, and they don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah, have you heard of abatement with regards to traffic tickets?
I've heard of all this stuff. I've seen different people do it. And, you know, does it work? You know, it only works if you get somebody that is educated and is willing to uphold the law. The trouble is a lot of these people that are in these positions of power, they've already sold their soul, so to speak, and they take orders, and they're not going to give you anything based on what you say or what you do, because they just go ahead and do what they want to do because they're confident that there's no consequences to them violating you. You know? Mm. So that's what the problem is. And that's what I'm hoping that will come down from the top, that all of a sudden there will be consequences, and these people that are so confident of violating your rights with no repercussions will at that point have no cover, and then we can start winning our rights back. So anyway, I think it's going to come shortly. And you look at a lot of the work, if you read our paperwork, you know, you'll see that we're making these arguments in the federal court already, that we've already made these arguments, you know?
Many of us.
Anyway, if that's it, I want to move on before Brent comes.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. Nice talking to you. We have an overseas caller here. I don't know who it is, but I'm going to unmute them, and I'm going to let them state their name and perhaps where they're from. So go ahead. Your country code is +41. I don't know where that is, but you've been unmuted.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? This is Sophie. Hello. I'm calling from Switzerland.
Oh, how nice. What's up in Switzerland tonight?
We're having really nice warm weather, like spring weather. And a little bit of snow off and on, and a little bit of the C virus scare. I'm not scared, however. I believe it's probably a latest consensus microwave illness.
Exactly. I firmly believe that China's making it worse with their 5G because they can. You know what I mean? So.
Yes.
They're augmenting that,
right.
See, that
they,
virus.
They were vaccinated in December as well.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I think there's a delay in our telephone system. But
yeah.
I believe they had vaccinations done in December as well, before the 5G was implemented. Yeah.
Oh, you mean in China?
Yes.
Oh, see, I hadn't heard that.
In combination of the vaccines, this was...
Well, you know they have been unsuccessful with making a vaccine that's 100% effective for what they wanted. So the next thing is to lower our immune systems to make us susceptible for the vaccines that they can create.
I'm not talking about a vaccination for the virus. I'm talking about vaccinations in combination with the 5G that causes the virus.
I understand, and the reason that they want us all to have these mandatory vaccination is because it lowers the immune system, and then you become susceptible to whatever is out there. Where without the vaccinations, you wouldn't catch half of this stuff to begin with.
Exactly.
I didn't vaccinate my children, and they
I
never
agree with
they
you 100%.
They didn't run around with runny noses. Everybody thinks that a little kid with a runny, sitting there with a runny nose and snot coming down his nose and coughing is normal because everybody gets their children vaccinated, and that has now become the new normal.
I agree. I would not vaccinate if I had it to do over. My children had very minimal vaccinations. And I would have, had I known then what I know now, they would have had no vaccinations.
Well, it's a process. And I did get my first son the polio vaccine. I went through the trouble of getting the dead vaccine. And that was the only vaccination he ever got. I mean, the other one was the tetanus shot, which, my goodness, you know how many tetanus shots I got as a kid every time? Back when I was a kid, when you scraped yourself, they'd give you a tetanus shot. And then they said, well, no, you know, New Year's every 7 years or whatever. I must have had 100 tetanus shots in my day, though. But I'm pretty healthy. It didn't hurt me.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think it was because I didn't really get any other ones, really. What's that?
Some people can detox from their system. Some people can detox the vaccinations from their system, but when injected into their tissues, you do not use the normal detoxification system of your body. Sherry Tenpenny said there is only a very slight chance anyone should get a tetanus shot. And like you said, people are getting tetanus shots when they cut their finger with a knife in dishwater. No. You should only get a tetanus shot in a very, very severe case, which is seldom.
Well, I did some research, and I came to understand that tetanus is something that came out of horse manure. I mean, and it can form a cyst, and it can last for years outside. And that's where the misnomer came, that tetanus came from a rusty nail, because the farmer would be outside, poke himself with a rusty nail and get tetanus. Well, that's only because he had horses on the farm. And all the cities had horses for many years. New York City had horses and carriages. And so that manure was down in the basements, and it was all around. So there were chances that there could be spores. And when you cut yourself, if that spore was there and it got into the cut, then you could get tetanus. But in this day and age, it's been 100 years since there's horses in New York City. I doubt that there's very much tetanus floating around anywhere, to be honest with you, except for on a horse farm, maybe, you know?
And the cut would have to be deep enough where you can't clean it.
Right. Well, if anybody should have caught it, it should have been me, because I had horses, and I worked with horses and lived with horses and cut myself with horses. And of course, I got a lot of tetanus shots, too, before I had horses, but once I got a horse, I didn't get any more tetanus shots, because at that point, they started saying you didn't need them anymore. If you had it, you could go 7 years, 10 years, and when I got older and it was my decision, I just never bothered to go get tetanus shots, you know. But anyway, we agree on this.
You obviously had a very good immune system.
Well, I was living, you know, we were farming, and we were making our own stuff, you know what I mean, milking goats and all that stuff. So, yeah, anyway, I probably didn't have a lot of stress on my body like we do today. My goodness, you walk around today, and we got cell phones, and we got GMOs, and we got all kinds of crazy stuff in our food. So, yeah, it's hard to live like that anymore.
Attacks from all fronts.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It just bothers me that they want to do a mandatory vaccination, which is a complete violation of everything that I believe in, and I don't believe that they have the authority to do that in a free country. Because look at in America, our rights are couched in property rights. That's where they are, basically. And your first piece of property is your body. So by them telling you that you got to do this or that with your body, it means you don't own your body either. That's like the final violation. So I don't know how crazy they are in Switzerland with all this stuff, but I think it's pretty much the same all over now, because you have the televisions, you know, programming people. So...
Oh, that's all over. I think we are incredibly indoctrinated here. You know, they are mentally indoctrinated when they don't think they need the guns.
Exactly. Yep, and that's the one thing, that's the one problem they have in America, that there's so many guns out there and so many they don't even know about. And I think that's one of the only things that has kept us this free for this long, because I think they really, really are afraid of starting something with the people. You know, people keep saying, oh, they're going to go door to door and take guns. I don't believe it. I don't think they're that stupid, to be honest with you. I think that they will unleash a sleeping giant, and they'll rue the day that they do that. For years they've discovered that, you know, the one step backwards, two steps forward, and that's what they're going to keep doing. I don't think you're going to see any big crackdowns, because that's what brings the people out. That's what starts revolution, and that's what ends their legacy. When they push the envelope, they're going to lose, and that's all there is to it. And anybody that has half a brain should understand that, you know. So anyway, look, I don't know.
Well, they are going to lose.
Well, yeah, we know how the program ends up ultimately, but hopefully we don't have a lot of death and destruction. When, you know, hopefully we can do it more peacefully than other ways. I don't know if Brent is in here. If anybody could look and see, I don't see him in the queue. I don't know where he would come in. He comes in as Brent, I believe, right? Brent is supposed to be here by 11.
No, he's in here. He's common lawyer, and he can unmute himself whenever you
okay.
Give him the okay.
I'm sorry. What was your name, the woman from Switzerland? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Sophie.
Well, it's really good to have somebody from Switzerland that you can actually get our program. And you're right, we do have some kind of delay in the phone here, I noticed, between you and I.
Yes.
But it's good to hear from you. And I know that there's other people around the world that listen to us that can get us, that are interested in the common law. And look, we should all be interested in it. Common law is really the laws of nature and nature's God, and we're all entitled to it. You don't have to be American or any other nationality. We should, you know, as a human being, we should be under common law. And there's no reason that every nation can't institute this rule of law. So I believe. And further, I want to say, you know,
I'm calling for a question.
Okay, go ahead.
I didn't realize I would be on a conference call. I called the Alliance earlier this week. I was told about this Alliance about 2 years ago when I was living in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to name any names here, but it's regarding a common law trust, a home that was in a common law trust in the area of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, if this transfer happened rightfully in the eyes of God, then this is all I need to know. But some people were quite hurt over a deal financially and in other ways. And I don't believe this kind of activity should go on. And so I have some questions, but I'm not sure. I guess I could just explain what happened and not name any names.
Well, look, as far as the trust goes, I mean, we have Brent, who's a common law lawyer, that's coming up next to speak. And it would almost be better if you could send the questions to Jan, and then maybe we could go over them with Brent and discuss them, because I don't know, you know, matter of fact, he's coming up now. You can even ask him that question, because I think he knows, well, I know he knows more about common law trust than I do. And you said there was a trust that was in place that you think was valid, but yet there was a bill or something that came in that's extenuating circumstances, right?
I think the whole trust was done improperly.
Okay.
And there was a lot of wrongdoing throughout, and a lot of damages to a few people involved.
Right. So if they did it improperly, that's going to negate it. It's like it didn't exist then. ultimately is what happens, I would think. You know, I mean, without knowing any of the particulars, that would be my instinct at that point. If they didn't do it right, then it's not right. It's not valid. It doesn't hold. And I don't know what you do from there. I mean, then you have to proceed like there is no trust, I guess. Right?
So it's been now, the 2-year deadline is up in 2 weeks. So the question would be whether it makes sense to pursue anything, to file a claim, and some other procedures before this time.
Well, you know, you're talking about a statute when you say the 2-year limit, yeah, and I mean you're working under trust law. So the thing is that, you know, if there was something that was done wrong, that's fraud. And I don't know that there is any kind of statute of limitation when something's done wrong. You know, there should be no limitation when there's fraud in a contract. You know what I mean? I mean, I know they make some certain statutes of limitations because, and I mean, I understand that if you wait too many years and then try to bring something up, that you know, it loses, you know, trying to get all the evidence back in there and getting people to remember becomes hard. So in order to prevent that, sometimes they put a statute of limitations on certain things. But I do know that, I mean, look at even our own rotten IRS who don't run by much law except for their own, but one of their premises is that if they can prove fraud, there is no statute of limitations. They go back as far as they want. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If that's the case with them, should be the case with you, you know? So what you're saying is you got 2 weeks and then the statute to protest is up. And I don't know what to tell you about that, but, you know, if you think that they're going to run hard and fast with that, even though it wasn't done right to begin with, look at that whole statute falls by the wayside. If they didn't issue the trust properly, then there is no trust, and then there is no statute of limitations either. I mean, are you following my logic here?
Yes. Another question I would have then is, there is a will involved. If the trust does not exist, then the will trumps the trust. But would the will need to be short certificated before a certain time period?
I don't know. You know, see, I'm going to bring Brent in, and maybe Brent can. I'm sure he's listening to this, so. He will definitely be able to give you a better answer on that than I will. We've kind of been on 15 minutes, and I don't want to hold him up much longer, so I'd like to get off and bring Brent in, and I'm sure he's heard what we're talking about at this point, that, you know, you had this trust that wasn't set up right, and there's a statute of limitation on, you know, that's up in 2 weeks, but sounds to me like if there was fraud there, that the trust didn't exist. So, you know, is there a limitation on the will? And I don't think that there is. If you got a properly executed will, I don't know that you need to do anything else with it. If you can prove that it was real and it was proper and done by the person, I think it holds up no matter what. But I'm going to let him answer that, whether or not it needs to be certificated or whatever else you're saying, because he's our common law lawyer, and he's actually, you know, he's practiced in court. I have not, okay? So I'm going to defer that to him, okay?
The one last thing, mm-hmm. One quick thing before you mute me. The fiduciary owner was asked to change the trust for many years because it was done incorrectly, and mm-hmm. he did not do so, and he had not the time to do so. So he was asked to change the trust to correct it, and he didn't do so, and then this person passed away.
Yeah, that complicates everything.
Thank you for hearing me.
And you know what, Sophie, we can unmute you if Brent has a question. It's not like I'm throwing you down the drain here, so just hang in there, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Nice talking. Nice hearing from Switzerland tonight. But don't go away. Listen, because I'm gonna let Brent come. We do have other people in the queue, but we're gonna let Brent do his thing because he only has so much time. Okay. So Brent, if you unmute yourself.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I'm here, Gerard. Give me a signal that I'm being heard.
You are being heard.
Oh, good, good.
I'm going to mute Sophie, and you go ahead and do your... I don't know if you heard her question where, you know, there was this trust, and it wasn't done right, and it was never corrected, and then this particular person, one of the people there died, and she has a will, and she wants to know, does the will take precedent now since the trust was done wrong? You know, and does it need to be certificated, whatever that means? And I don't know anything about that. So maybe you could say a couple words on that if you happen to think you know about that. Go ahead.
Well, when it comes right down to it, it depends upon what a judge in equity would do. And the trust, if it went into court, and the will, would be in the equitable courts, and a decision would have to be made. I don't know enough of the facts of the case to say what I think a court would do, and to say also what any federal tax consequences might be, because in such cases, the powers that tax try to step in and take their cut, often unlawfully, by the way. All of those things, the big picture, all the facts need to be taken into consideration, and if you're interested in pursuing this further, just go to commonlawyer.com and send me an email and with a telephone number, and we can talk. Gerard, I knew there was something about you that I liked, and when you said you used to milk goats, then I figured out what it was.
I grew up on goat's milk because I was lactose intolerant, but anyway, that's another story.
I get it. Okay. Oh, I love goats. We used to milk them too, and then all of a sudden, you got a call from Switzerland, and Switzerland is the only country in Europe I've been to. And when I was there, I just by walking down a cobblestone street, I happened on to the former quarters of Ulrich Zwingli, and a young gal there who saw me lounging outside the door. It was summertime. She invited me in and asked me what I was interested in. There was a bunch of other young people there, and they took me up to the place where Ulrich Zwingli translated the Bible into his native German-Swiss tongue. He's the one that said, he translated, "The Lord is my shepherd. He maketh me to lie down in an alpine meadow." He was a patriot to his own country, and he was a goat herder. Gerard, by the way,
no
the last
kid.
Of 11 children, and they raised goats. That's what Ulrich Zwingli did. He was then he became a priest. Oh, fascinating story, not to get off, but I say to this, it just seemed funny. It reminded me of goats from one end to the other when you started talking. And this lady that called from Switzerland, who apparently is from Pennsylvania, go to commonlawyer.com, and you can email and leave a number there, and if you want to talk, I'm willing to talk, but if you want to ask a further question now, you can do that too. I'm sure Gerard would unmute you. In the meantime, I'll go ahead and start talking about what I had planned to talk about, and I won't be long here. I'll try to keep it short, and if you want to chime in later, there are other people that want to, too, I think. Let me say what I was going to say. I want to read this little exchange here that I have in the book called The Militia of the Several States. By the way, when Switzerland came up, then I thought to myself, too, what is the difference between the right to keep and bear arms in Switzerland and the right to keep and bear arms, the right, that is the responsibility, the duty, in America? And people often hold Switzerland up as a good example because in Switzerland, every person or every able-bodied male is a member of the, what do they call it? I don't know what they call it, but what it amounts to is they all must qualify as marksmen. The old story is that when Hitler was talking to Switzerland during World War II, or just before the war, of course he wanted to annex all the German-speaking parts of Europe into Germany. And half, or a good portion of Switzerland is German-speaking. The other portion is French-speaking. I was in Zurich. Zurich is German-speaking. He wanted to annex them. And he was discussing with the government leaders of Switzerland what he wanted to do, and he hinted to them, if you don't allow the annexation of the German parts of the German-speaking parts of Switzerland into Germany, I may consider invasion. And the leader of the Swiss Army said, well, I don't think that'd be wise. He said, why not? He said, well, I'll tell you what we would do. He said, my men are excellent marksmen. We have 500,000 of them armed, and you have 1 million men, you say, under arms in your army. All our men would have to do, each one of them, there's 500,000 of us, 1 million of you. Our men are expert marksmen. Each one of them would fire 2 rounds and go home, and that would be the end of that. And, of course, Hitler never did invade Switzerland. Well, Switzerland, now somebody just sent me a message, I'm going to look at it, about Switzerland, and said, compulsory military service applies to all male Swiss citizens, with women serving voluntarily. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you passing that along to me. That's fascinating. It's very much like the militia, but here's the difference between what Switzerland does and the common law militia. The common law militia, the old furred fair of the United States, as it is understood and should be understood under the four militia clauses of a United States Constitution. The difference is this. In Switzerland, the government provides the firearm and the ammunition. Now, it is true that at the end of service, of the militiaman's service in Switzerland, he takes his firearm home and he keeps it. It's a military-grade weapon. But at common law, it's every man's duty to furnish the military-grade weapon that his state says he must purchase at his own expense, and he must also, at his own expense and his own time, he must qualify, obtain training as a marksman and as a man who is safe, S-A-F-E, in the carrying and handling of a firearm. Men that are not trained to be safe in the carrying and handling of firearms are more of a burden than a benefit. It doesn't come out in the news. I don't know what it's like now because I'm not around such things, but I can tell you for sure that young military men sometimes kill each other accidentally. I know that because I was there when it happened. And it's because young men are cowboys by nature. That means they try to do things they had not to try to do, and they try to cash checks that their bodies, well, they write checks their bodies can't cash. That's what I meant to say. And they are a little bit too familiar with firearms, and that causes problems. The darn things are downright dangersome. They're important, but they're dangersome. And they're not to be played with. They're to be treated with the respect you would treat the girl that you're courting and want to marry. That's why the soldiers sing, Cindy, Cindy, Cindy Lou, I love my rifle more than you. You used to be my beauty queen, now I love my M16. You and I used to have some fun, but now I love my old M1. All of those kinds of lyrics are designed to inculcate respect for the firearm, just as you ought to have respect for the female of the species, because she can be dangerous too. Don't think she can't, just like the man, only even more so. And for good reason, I might add. For good reason. And she ought to know it. Well, let's talk about the militia here in America a little bit and a little bit of history about it briefly. I have to get back to finding what I was going to say. I can do this from memory, maybe. Let me try it. I was going to talk about a young lawyer. A young lawyer who in the year 1842 set about to find the power that stirred the underfed and ill-fitted American militiamen to dare the odds with their lives against the world's best-fed, best-equipped, and best-trained military forces, namely British regulars and German Hessians. British regulars and German Hessians. Listen, those German Hessians were nothing to be trifled with. They brought to military life the precision and the dedication to obedience of orders that no one in the world has ever known like they have. It's part of their culture, the Germanic culture, to do that. And then add to that the British regulars with their understanding of loyalty to their country. Well, this young lawyer in the year 1842 sought out and questioned a 91-year-old militiaman by the name of Captain Levi Preston. He was a veteran of the historic battle at Concord, back when Paul Revere made his ride. That was Captain Levi Preston. This young lawyer wanted to know the answers to some questions about, well, listen to him. He asked this old 91-year-old Massachusetts militiaman. He said, "Did you take up arms against intolerable oppressions?" "Oppressions?" he said. "I didn't feel any oppressions." "What? Were you not oppressed by the Stamp Act?" "I never saw one of those stamps," he said. "I certainly never paid a penny for one." "Well," he said, "what about the tea tax?" The old man said, "Tea tax? I never drank a drop of the stuff. The boys threw it all overboard." Well, this young lawyer thought maybe he was an intellectual. He said, "Well, then I suppose you had been reading Harrington or Sidney and Locke about the eternal principles of liberty." The old man said, "Never heard of them. We read only the Bible, the Catechism, Watts, Psalms and Hymns, and the Almanac." "Well, then what was the matter? And what did you mean, going to the fight?" He said, "Young man, what we meant in going for those redcoats was this." Now listen to his answer. This is what motivated him. "We had always governed ourselves, and we always meant to. They didn't mean that we should." That was his answer. "We had always governed ourselves, and we always meant to. They," that is the British, "did not mean that we should." That's what ticked him off. And that's what motivated him to stand fast. And when you, of course, read about those battles at Concord and Lexington, the Americans weren't the aggressors. They just stood fast. And the British officers said, "Disperse, you rebels!" What did they do? They just stood there, "If there must be a war, let them begin it. We're not going to begin it." Well, for Captain Preston and his fellow militiamen, self-government meant that each person governed his own body, his own thoughts, and his own actions. And by the way, if you don't do that, somebody else will do it for you, and you won't like it. That's right. You must govern your own body, your own tongue, your own actions, and your own words. And if you don't, God's got other plans for you, and he'll use the ugliest people to slap you back in line. I've seen it happen. Oh, I've even experienced it. And as the old captain revealed, such love for self-government grew from an education for freemanship. Freemanship, which shows itself in two books. One unwritten, and the other written. The unwritten volume is the Laws of Nature. Bill Blackstone, in his commentaries on the Laws of England, calls general revelation, that's what he calls it, general revelation. Why? Because he said it applies to everybody. Everybody. The laws of nature, unwritten. It shows us the Creator's ordering of power in nature. Signs and seasons and laws of nature needful for living in this life here on land. That's what Blackstone says. Then Blackstone says, but then he says, there is the written volume, Lex Scripta. He calls that special revelation because it is more personal. It's written, and it reveals nature's God along with his stirring words of life. That's the Bible. The law unwritten, that's our common law. That's what we call it. And the law written, that's the Bible. And then he says that we read the almanac with its yearly reckonings. That's what the almanac is, of the Creator's signs and seasons. Well, that's the laws of nature, unwritten, in the nature of creation around us. He read that, he said. That's all we read. We didn't read the intellectuals. We didn't read John Locke. We didn't read Harrington. We didn't read Algernon Sidney. Listen, I've read Algernon Sidney. I have his book. It was one of the three books that Tom Jefferson said was required reading at the University of Virginia. Whoever heard of Algernon Sidney? Back then, they knew who Algernon Sidney was. But this fella, the one who was willing to risk his life, he'd never read him. Is that what it takes? Do you have to be an intellectual? No, that's not what it takes. What does it take? It takes men who have ordered their lives according to the orders, who want to order their lives, I should say. Nobody ever completely does it. But wants to order their lives according to the order of the God of all order. All order. Who is that? The maker of heaven and earth and all that in them is, and he delivers his will to us in two volumes. The first one unwritten, the laws of nature, and the second written, the Bible. These and no others, these and no more. That's it. And these two grand volumes, the one unwritten and general for all, and the other written and special to the person wanting to know more, reveal, as our Declaration of 76 puts it, the laws of nature and of nature's God. That phrase that arose out of the Scottish Enlightenment that took over all the English-speaking world, including John Locke, that phrase denotes those two volumes. Our common law, unwritten, and the Bible written. This was Captain Preston's trusted standard, stirring him to defend to the end his God-given duties, that's what a right is, of self-government. Our country never arose from any whole new idea for law and government. Now, we didn't change anything. This war we had with Britain did not change our form of government at all. We just put it down on paper and made it more sure. It was a common law government, and that's what the Constitution expresses in a particular way, our common law government. As did the framers of Magna Carta, our forebears sought to return to the ancient common law principles and did. Thus, our war for separation from Britain was no revolt against authority. Let me repeat that. Our war for separation from Britain was no revolt against authority, but was rather British Americans' demand that those in power respect common law authority. The laws of nature's God. And the colonists of that day were determined to keep and enjoy the freedoms and benefits of their common law government in the New World. In fact, says Winston Churchill, the colony's 18th century war with Britain was the Puritans' 17th century war with the Royalists continued in the New World, where children of the Puritans and Royalists, remember, George Washington's grandfather was a devotee of the Crown of England and fought against the Puritan party in England. And George Washington's grandfather came to the New World so he would not have his head lopped from his shoulders. And sons and grandsons of those people, in Virginia, for example, joined with sons and grandsons of the other side of the English Revolution, that is, the Puritans in New England, and they said the problem's the same. That's why it was so important, of course, for George Washington to be at a prominent position, because people in Virginia respected him. We wanted that we, the colonists, wanted to bring those two factions together that had been separated in Britain and the New World. Unfortunately, of course, there was another war that was to come between those two factions, and it almost ripped our country clean apart. Thus our common law, thus in common law England, the king had no limits, of course. That's why we fought. But in his empire, the British Empire, he said he was emperor. That was the difference, and that's why we went to war. Gerard, I'm going to cut it off here because there may be more that some people want to say. It's 8:42.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me see here. We have Jim. Got a couple people. We'll see if we can take some and get some through here. Go ahead, Jim. You've been unmuted.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is Jim from California. Yeah, I just had a, I think earlier in the session you were talking about code section 83 in the IRS code. Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jim. Can you hear me?
Yeah, so there I can hear you. I can't hear Gerard.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what happened to Gerard, but go ahead, because I think others can hear you.
Yeah, earlier on the session, I think Gerard was talking about, he was trying to, he couldn't remember the code section of the IRS code that talked about wages as property. And that's outlined in section 83 of the IRS code.
That's right. Yep.
There was an excellent book by David Merlins.
Merlins, that's who I was talking about, yep.
Yeah, that talks about that. It's called Codebreaker. Very good book, and he outlines a strategy for using that against the IRS in court, along with a bunch of court cases and so forth that are referenced. That was all I had to say about that.
Well, his videos are still up, and I think they're very good. David Merlin, I've watched them. It was a while ago, that's why I didn't remember, but...
that's interesting. I was not aware of his videos. Are those on YouTube?
They're on YouTube, and they're very good. He's got a whole series of them. If you put in David Merlin, you can... He has a website, and I forget the name of it. And there's more on the website. He hasn't been active in a while. You know, he was doing active cases with the IRS, and he did win a case, but then, you know, they turn around and change things and try to fix things and get out of that. But his line of reasoning and his way of going about it is the type of cases that at some point we need to bring back into the court and pull the IRS on the carpet. And when we get some judges that are going to go by the rule of law. Look at his argument. You can't argue against it because it's right.
I looked at it.
It's common sense. It's clear as the nose on your face, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I used some of his work in my own case, which I'm currently in appeals on. So, yeah, I'm hoping for the best with that. Very informative, very smart guy. He basically took apart Section 83 of the IRS code and... essentially proves that wages are not considered income, and in fact they're treated as private property.
see, John doesn't want to go there because John figures that what's the point of arguing that when they have no right to tax our income in the first place? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, in this case, you're actually using their own code sections against them, so I can understand that logic as well.
Right, right.
Yeah, so.
Well, actually, if they, look at, when they wrote, here's the thing, when they wrote Title 26 and the way they wrote it, they had to make sure it was constitutional, and they're very sneaky about it. So if you follow what they say, it is constitutional. Number one is if you can deduct your labor, then they're not taxing your work.
Okay.
So they're only taxing income, which is passive money from dividends and things that they have control over, right?
Yes.
So, and they'll tell you, income tax is voluntary. Yeah, well, you volunteer in when you fill out that W-2 to work. So you're self-incriminating yourself with your W-2s and your 1099s. And if you didn't have to fill them out to begin with, you're not telling on yourself, and therefore they have no case on you. But
right.
The only way that you can do that today is to become self-employed and not send that stuff in, because at that point you're in control of yourself. You go to an employer and tell him, I don't want you to send this in, he's going to think you're crazy, and of course you have a lawsuit against him.
Yeah.
But that's not a good start to a new job.
Exactly. So even if you sign all those documents with the UCC 1-308, which essentially makes the document null and void, but what, you know, Does that not, it doesn't afford you any protection, I guess, because I've seen where they come after people for doing that anyway.
Yeah, and if anybody's knowledgeable when you're signing that stuff, they won't accept it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because what you're doing is you just negated the contract
that they're
requiring you to enter into.
Right.
As far as they're concerned, you're committing fraud.
Well, that's a disease.
Yeah. So, anyway, I appreciate that. Thanks for bringing it up. I'm going back from 5 years ago. You know, I was big into David Merlin back then, and I didn't remember. I had trouble remembering his name because I'm getting senior moments now at this point in my life. But I think he's very good, and anybody wants to go on here and listen to him, I think it's a good education, you know?
Yeah. Welcome to the club. Yeah, and by the way, he spells his name M-Y-R-L-A-N-D.
Right.
So it's a little bit weird if you're trying to find him.
Mm-hmm.
So, very good. All right, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for putting on a great show tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Yep. Okay, we have Cheryl from Oregon, it looks like. Go ahead, you've been unmuted. Cheryl from Oregon.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I had it on mute and didn't know it. My question is, what is a good question to ask an attorney to make sure that they're working for you and not, you know, the state?
Gee, I don't know. You know, look, at an attorney, basically, most attorneys are officers of the court. So,
right. Yeah.
I don't know, you know, and if they're a bar lawyer, you know, I've been told that you're the third one on his list that he's beholden to.
Well, right,
take that for what it's worth. Look at it, when the judge pulls the attorney in back in his chambers and says, don't do this or don't do that, pretty much that's what happens, because if that attorney wants to practice in that court, he doesn't want to tick that judge off because he won't win any cases then, you know what I mean?
Right,
so,
right. Well, it's a capital offense.
I don't know what you can ask him or if he would even admit, but I understand where you're going with that.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a capital offense, and it's for, you know, my soon-to-be daughter-in-law, and, you know, I know she's innocent, but the thing is, you know, I just want to make sure that she's getting represented, you know, good, because she's looking at, you know, a lot of time if she, you know, gets found guilty for something she didn't do. So, anyway, I'd try and ask. So, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
And it's been a very good show. And this is my first time here with you guys, and I plan on being here a lot more. So, thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad you like it, and we're glad to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Okay, we got Winthrop from Tennessee. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gerard, I've heard several people talk tonight with issues about the right to travel.
Mm-hmm.
I come across to a YouTube channel. I've had it for years, but they just published a new video today. It's called the Memorandum of Law on Right to Travel. And the channel is High Frequency Radio. It's a YouTube channel, High Frequency Radio.
I've seen it.
The title
yep.
of the video is Memorandum of Law on Right to Travel. What an awesome document. Very well put together. They may have even got some of the data from our website.
Yeah, there's some good sites out there. And there's a guy that was a Texas trooper that runs his own site, and I gave it out last week. And he does a good job, and I think he has that document you're talking about on his website. And he has a dialogue that you stick to when you get pulled over, and he said, if you follow the dialogue, he says, I'll guarantee you that when you get to court, the DA is going to realize that he's lost. So it's very right. interesting. And, I mean, you're not getting wise with the cop or anything, but you're conducting yourself in such a way that you're putting stuff on the record. And the officer doesn't even realize what you're doing. But when you go to court and the DA's there, he's going to understand what you did, and he's going to understand that they don't have anything, you know, any contract with you or however, whatever.
The biggest thing I got away from it was the difference between public and private. We're operating in a private status. So if we're operating in a private status, then he doesn't have jurisdiction. And that ends it right there. But it's a good video. It's an hour and a half long, but it has a really good document along with it. And it's called a Memorandum of Law on the Right to Travel, and it cites all these court citations. So if anybody's interested, they can look at a High Frequency Radio.
Okay.
When I got stopped here in Tennessee, I did a judicial notice, and I wrote to the court. I wrote to the judge. I sent him a judicial notice. And when I got there, he dismissed my case.
I'm sorry, what did you say? He did what?
He dismissed my case. I sent about 10 days in advance, I sent him a judicial notice. Let them know who I was and what my status was. And I used a lot of documentation, a lot of stuff from this guy's channel prior to this document here. This document here was just posted today. But prior to that, I sent a judicial notice, and my case was dismissed.
Yeah, we've had some good results sending paperwork in on traffic cases because some of the judges don't want to, you know, they don't want to spar with anybody that comes in with that kind of knowledge. They're a little fearful of it because they're not the look at in the local town courts. What are they getting? They're just a regular guy that was elected for judge and they took a couple courses. And they're no legal aficionado by any sense of the imagination. You know what I mean? So a lot of times they'll just dismiss the case based on your paperwork because they don't want to go there. And when you send good paperwork in like that, you impress them, and he doesn't want to get up there and spar with you. You know, around here when we were taking, you know, helping people with their cases early on, when they knew that we were coming, they made sure that we were the last people that they cleared the courtroom out because they don't want people hearing what we're saying. One of the mistakes they made is they had us there, and we were taking the judge to task on something, and then the next guy come up, and he says, I want what he just did.
I was next to the last.
Yeah,
he said me for almost the last.
They learned their lesson really quick. They made sure that by the time they got to us, there was nobody left in the courtroom, you know.
Yeah.
And then they got worse. They started doing stuff like giving us our own court dates, which is illegal because now what they're doing is holding a secret court. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to try you on their court dates.
Yeah, I don't want to hold up your time. We'll let the other callers on, but I just want to mention that High Frequency Radio and mm-hmm. Memorandum of Law on Right to Travel.
Yep. Okay. It's funny because I just ran across this site the other day, and I and I was looking at him. He has a lot of good stuff.
Huh? Oh yeah, he's good. He's good. He's got a lot of good stuff. You're right.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And we have here Robert O. from Michigan. How you doing, Robert?
Just fine, Gerard.
Go
well,
on.
Yeah. So, a little bit. We got a new governor, and she's got a real scheme this time. How would you like to own your property, but in lieu of paying taxes, a direct tax, especially if you have a land patent update on your property that's recognized in your property identification number? How would you like to pay the right to stay in your own house on your own private property and pay a tax to the state of Michigan for that right, and they're going to call it a rental tax?
sounds like an end run around private property, no?
I would say that she ought to change her name to Nitwit.
Did you ask her if she dreamed this all up by herself?
Oh, no, she had help.
Yeah.
Our attorney general isn't much better, believe me. So you got these eastern side of Michigan goofballs running the state. It's really getting interesting. You know, I think it's a good time that maybe they ought to learn the Constitution.
Yep.
So, anyhow, I heard that today, and I about fell out of my chair. I says, I don't believe this one.
You know what that tells me, Robert?
Mm-hmm.
It tells me that that the Patriots are having an effect. For her to even be addressing that, it means they're worried about her, no?
Yeah, they sure are. We voted down three times money for the roads in my county, and we voted it down because it always winds up with these little attachments called the Brownfield, the DDA, and all the rest of this stuff that does not apply to fixing the roads. It just applies to another way for them to get a little more tax money out of the poor old guy. So, anyhow.
Don't they call that pork barrel legislation?
Well, I've got other names for it, but that's kind of locker room stuff, so I don't put it on the air, but anyhow. But I just thought I'd mention it. It makes me want to be a little more aggressive with where I'm at with stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm going to force it a little harder. I should have went down to City Hall tonight. I've had a lot. I've started to make more appearances down there and make them aware that they ought to really do a subscribe to the oath of office, but they don't seem to have. They don't seem to think they have to do that because either they think they are the law or they are above the law. I haven't decided which yet, but. They don't know the Constitution. But I feel honored because I have my own little board down in the city manager's office, and he has on there everything that I've talked to him about, including a copy of my updated land patent. So I feel honored.
Yeah. Well, okay. at least he can't say he's ignorant, so that's good. I know you do good work, Robert. Keep it up.
Yeah,
it's
a lot of fun.
We gotta hope that one day we'll have a judge that'll actually stick to the Constitution and we'll take them to task.
Well, you know, I think that's going to come about by having a sheriff that teaches the judge the Constitution.
Well, that's what I said tonight. That's why, you know, people got to pay attention to the sheriff in the county because that's how we're going to win this thing back.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. So anyhow, I just wanted to throw that in there. And
okay.
So
very good.
I yield. Well, okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we got Jim from, looks like PA. Go ahead, Jim.
In Pennsylvania. Yeah, a lot has been discussed since I originally called in, Gerard. But what I'd like to do is revisit Jan's first question. And I think it went something like, what happens if Congress, who has the authority to regulate trade, do not do it properly? Or, and I'm not sure what I'm trying to get at, it constitutional. But so what could transpire if they don't regulate the trade correctly? And I guess it's constitutionally. I yield.
Well, that was kind of my answer, that, you know, if they're following the Constitution, you won't degrade into socialism, because the powers of each branch are spelled out. And I believe the problem we have today is, you know, they're all overreaching their authority and their jurisdiction, and they're making all kinds of crazy rulings and laws that are outside their jurisdiction. So basically, you know, we the people, we're supposed to be the final arbiters, but, you know, are we? I mean, we don't know how to assert ourselves. And, you know, look at, we have nullification as one of the things that we can do, and we need to do that more. So I appreciate that. Okay,
let me follow up on that, because I didn't really get to my thought on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which came up before with Judge Roberts was presiding over the impeachment hearings. Well, I guess my direct question is, what authority would the executive branch, because you also mentioned the three branches, separate branches of government, what authority could the executive branch actually utilize to make our laws constitutional, or our acts constitutional, that the Supreme Court rules on, or that the Congress regulates our trade? Could the executive branch intervene, and how could they do that?
Well, if you listened to Brent, I think last week, he said, look at those three branches of government. One can't make the other one do anything. You know, they have no, and so it's all, ultimately, I guess it's up to we the people, and Brent could chime in on this if he wants. You know, you're not going to get anything better than us. You know, if we're not good enough, then we can't expect these ones that are in office to be better than us, when we need to educate ourselves and hold their feet to the fire. And I think that's the problem, that everybody's. You know, ignorant to what the laws are, and ultimately it is the people who are the final arbiter. And like I said, we have the power of nullification. And look, there's lots of games that the three branches can play between themselves. If the president doesn't like something that the Supreme Court does, and I don't know, you know, look at, Trump has been certainly slapping them with executive orders and using the power of the presidency to his best ability to kind of get his way. And I think he's shown us some creative things that can be done constitutionally in that direction. So there, it's not like there's nothing that can be done, you know, but ultimately I think we need to educate ourselves, because it's up to us to hold their feet to the fire, and we're the final arbiter in the local courts, in the juries. And so, you know, that's how prohibition went away, when juries refused to convict, then eventually prosecutors stopped bringing the case, because they'd catch them red-handed with all the evidence, and the jury go, not guilty. They couldn't have that. And so they ended up repealing it, because it was it was not enforceable anymore because the juries refused to convict on it. And we've seen some modern examples of that. In the state car inspection system, there's been 12 states that have repealed their state inspections, and the way that it was done is they got to a point where they had so many tickets going through the courts on the state inspection that I guess a team of lawyers got together and they made the case, and they said, look, at when you arise to this many tickets and you have this many cars in your states, people are not complying with that inspection program for one reason or the other, but basically it's nullified. The people have spoken. You need to get rid of your program because nobody's complying. And so that's why, you know, and over here in New York State, I think they're getting to the point where they're getting so many tickets, and it's the only time I've ever seen judges dismiss a ticket and completely dismiss it. You know, a lot of times if a judge wants to dismiss a ticket, he dismisses the ticket, but you have to pay the state surcharge, which in New York is down $95. It's ridiculous. But I've noticed, you know, on some of these inspection stickers, tickets, if they come in with a receipt that they got it done, he completely negates the whole thing, including the state surcharge. And what that tells me is the state said, let these people go because I think they're getting too many tickets and they're afraid that they're going to lose their program. So let that be, you know, people take note of that. I believe that that's something that's going on. Anyway,
Gerard, allow me to re-ask this question. Let me give you an example. What we want our county sheriffs to do, if our executive branch, our federal executive branch of government, did what we want our county sheriffs to do? That's my question. The executive have the power of enforcement of law?
Well, you're exactly right. The sheriff has the power of enforcement. The other branches of government don't have the same authority of arrest that the sheriff does. You know, I mean, that's why he's considered the highest law enforcement official in the land.
Okay, and I thought it was the county, but however.
Oh, well, that's what I mean.
I thought
in the
it
county,
was
right.
they have federal agents. What do federal agents do?
Well, at federal agents, that's a whole other story. I mean, you do have the Marshals Service, and they were the oldest one because they were put in by Washington, and they have jurisdiction in the federal court districts, from the way I understand it. But they're appointed by the president. They're not elected. It's usually a life appointment, and I don't know about any other federal thing that's going on. Most of the other federal ABC things are without the authority they think they have. You know, that's from what I know. You know, look at the FBI, the FBI and the CIA and all these other ABC things. They basically don't have the jurisdiction that they think they do. I mean, look at the CIA is over doing all kinds of things. They're not even supposed to be operating in this country, but they do.
Well, George, the joke that I always make is, what are these Supreme Court judges going to do? And my good friend, who I'm going to speak about in a second, what are they going to? You always say, what are they going to come out in the robes and enforce their rulings, their opinions? Hobble out in their robes and enforce their rulings?
Well,
I yield.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's time for us to go, and look at Prohibition was gotten rid of by the people not complying and nullifying. And so, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, we should take a lesson from that. Anyway, thank you, everybody, and we'll come back next week, same time, same station, and we'll continue. I'm sorry I left some people, but it's already 10 after, and I don't want to go too much longer. I appreciate everybody, and it has been a good show, and we'll see you next Monday. Thank you. Have a good night. God bless.